Oh, thank you so much, Steve. It's us. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder, and we're here. We're here for you all day long. Basically, we'll take a little bit of a break from noon to one, but the rest of the time we'll be here.
Be honest, we take a little break between now.
The whole
and three.
Show's a break. I don't know if you just experienced what I did. Steve just had his baby. Steve Cochran's granddaughter was in the studio, and then everybody was holding the baby, and it was my turn. I didn't sign up for it, but it was where I was standing. They were handing the baby off in a way that Jay Cutler could never successfully pull off. And all of a sudden, I was having the baby, and then it hit me because it's been over a year that I've held anyone's baby. The last thing you'd ever want to do is drop somebody's baby. So there was a lot of pressure on me.
That's why I didn't touch Abigail Grace.
Well, especially in front of someone.
Exactly.
Right.
It's one thing if you're babysitting. Everything went fine.
Yeah.
I get very nervous.
I go out of my way because before we had our daughters, I had held babies, but not with the importance of holding your own baby. And they really stressed you have to cradle that baby's head. So I don't know if you saw me. But I was holding the baby by the head because I didn't want anything to happen.
At least you were cradling it.
I was.
I was a little nervous. I hadn't washed my hands, and I kind of politely.
That was big of you because a lot of people wouldn't take that into account. But you even said, I've not washed my hands. I don't want to hold the baby.
And she's still pretty new.
Yeah, 11 weeks, right? Yeah.
Is that it? See, I don't think I'd let anyone hold my baby other than family.
Until
they were at one.
Yeah, then it's fine.
The floppy head, although her head, she was holding her head up.
Very much so, and extremely aware. That's the thing. I wasn't used to that level of awareness until we had our daughters, to just how their eyes are always open and looking around and taking stuff in.
Their innocence.
Yeah.
Their innocence is
nice?
Just so touching, and then they grow up.
Yeah, and then what happens?
I don't know what happens.
Things change.
I just know that, you know, seeing a guy with a dog is pretty hot, but seeing a guy with a baby might be hotter. You looked really cute.
Well, thank you.
Even though you didn't move once you had her.
Like I said, the whole experience was built on me not dropping Steve's granddaughter. I wanted to make sure, above and beyond anything else that happened today, that I did not drop the baby.
Wasn't that a game?
Don't
in
drop
preschool?
The baby from Shopper. From the makers of Don't Break the Ice, Don't Drop the Baby.
There's something about other people's kids, too. It's not that I don't like other people's kids.
But
we were on a radio show trip years ago.
Yeah.
And Spike Manton, who you know very well,
mm-hmm.
and who used to work here, we had shared a babysitter in the room. And when I had two kids and he had two kids and we shared the price of a babysitter. And when we were leaving, to go out for dinner, Spike kissed his kids
mm-hmm.
and then he kissed my kids.
Oh, that's unusual.
It isn't it?
Yes.
And I looked at Jim, my husband, just have a good night, be good. He kissed his kids. Maybe he felt like I don't want to leave Wendy's kids out. But you know, I looked at my husband and I said, I'm not kissing his kids. I'm not kissing somebody else's kids.
I can't imagine
Isn't
what the
weird?
Reason was behind. I mean, I know
he's so nice.
He's
he didn't
incredibly
mean
nice.
Anything by it, but I just
right?
I'm not kissing someone else's
no,
kids.
No, I think you kiss your own kids or maybe a niece or a nephew. But
in family.
Family's fine.
It just was weird. I mean,
but where do you draw the line? Was he just going to walk around town kissing babies
I don't
at
know.
Random?
Is he a politician? I don't know. It just bothered me, and then it put me in a spot because it's like, oh, my God, do I reciprocate?
Right.
I'm not going to. I look
right.
at Jim really like, what do I do? He goes, I don't know. Why did he do that?
How are you with changing the diaper of a baby that is not your own?
I don't like even picking up if I'm helping a friend out. If they're out somewhere and I have to walk their dog, I get all weird about even picking
right.
up after their dog.
Right.
It's like my family's
stuff. Well, that's
worse,
though, don't you think? A dog.
Sometimes.
Yeah, but it's like you got to keep your germs within the family.
That's so true. There have been a couple of times, like even my nephew, when he was a baby, if he would stay with us, I would explain to all parties involved that the baby should not go to the bathroom while in my stead because I can't. Like if it's my own child, I can change the diaper, but other people's, like I'm not so good with.
I have a great niece. I guess I don't think I changed my nieces and nephew diapers, but no. I wasn't a parent then.
Yeah.
Now I'm a parent. I have a great niece. I would change Addie's diapers.
Would you? Yeah. Yeah.
Once.
Just the one time.
I'd make Jim
say
do
you
it.
Did it. Yeah. I had never, until we had our kids, I had never changed anybody's. Me, and then, you know, they taught us at the hospital how to do it. And I didn't, it's one of those things when they first, I don't think I'm cut out for this. But then having twins, I don't know how many I was changing a day. I wasn't even thinking about it at some point. I wasn't even watching anymore. I'd do other things while I would.
Exactly. You know? Do what you have to do. And
right.
Really double the trouble.
Yeah.
You know, if Terry was busy and you
right.
had two babies. You got to do it.
Right.
I had never even really babysat before, certainly not babies.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know anything to do about babies. And when Michael was born and we were in the hospital, I remember calling the nurse saying, he just threw up and I think his diaper's dirty.
Oh.
And she goes, well, what do you want me to do?
Right.
And I said, show me how to do any of this.
Right. It's not. I know a lot of animals have instincts, but I'm not.
None.
I'm not one of them. Mm-mm. I needed to be taught everything.
It's just weird, man. They're so delicate. You have to be so careful.
Right. Right.
And then poor Michael, again, firstborn. I remember that I was breastfeeding, walking through a doorway. Should be careful when you walk through a doorway.
A head could be bumped.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
And once I dropped the cordless phone on him and,
You
know, I was cradling it while I was breastfeeding him and the phone fell on him. And I remember calling the pediatrician in a panic and she said, I don't think you have to worry. How heavy is your phone? I said, oh, it's not really heavy at all. And
yeah.
She said, you're not the first person that did that.
Oh.
Thank God.
Right. That could be a mess. All right. We do have one of the fullest shows I think we've ever had ever. And if I even started to tell you what was on today's show.
We have no time.
There's no time. So just trust us when we tell you it's a good show. It's a full show. There's a lot of it coming. So stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We have a couple texts, and one is confusing to me, and I would like to share it with
Please
you.
Please do.
312, I held one of Bill's newborns when they visited Q101. So awkward for me. We worked there, of course, when you had the babies.
That's right.
So awkward for me. They were in a pinch and needed a quick hand. Was only for a few seconds. I was only 20 years old. Who is that?
Oh, that could be almost anybody. When you have twins, it's like having a backup. So if one is dropped, we could use the other one for parts.
That's why you have two ovaries, two testicles, two breasticles.
Right. So true.
I don't know who that is, but that was interesting.
Well, I remember, and again, this is years ago when we worked at Q101, we did a remote at Great America, and the girls were only, I think, 5 months old, 5 or 6 months old, and there were a bunch of fans that all of a sudden I looked over, and they were holding the babies, and I don't know how that happened.
Did they just grab them out of the twin stroller?
Well, my parents were there watching our daughters, but my mom and dad were easily distracted by things.
They were grandparents. They wanted to share in the love.
I think so, but you don't want your babies crowd surfing. That
so
seemed a bit
much.
So
how did you react to that?
I was panicked. I
went
looked
on another
over.
Ride.
I went on one more ride, and then I said, please, give the babies back.
I had just gotten engaged,
yep.
And my ring was too big.
Mm-hmm.
So I, of course, wanted to wear it because I had just gotten engaged. So I kept holding it on every ride because I was scared it was going to come
off. Yeah, sure.
Boy, the milestones we had when we were at that radio station.
I can't imagine.
Also, I had a C-section, says 847, so was in the hospital 5 days. My husband and nurses did all the diaper changes. My first one on day 5 fell off as soon as I picked up my son. I did get better.
Oh.
If you don't know, and you know, nurses really should help teach you because there are some parents like us that had no idea.
That's who did teach us. Where the nurses did a great job of showing what needs to be done. And I guess there's I know this for a fact now, there's a very specific order as to how things need to be done. And if you do them out of order, it's not good. So...
And then
you want to take off the old one first.
Right. I know that now, Steve, but it wasn't always like that.
A lot of misconception about breastfeeding, too. A lot of women just think you put the baby there and all, everything's good to go. That is not the case.
It takes more than that.
And I had a nurse who was pinching me in places I have not been pinched.
Oh.
And she...
And you're in show business.
That's a delicate area.
Yeah.
And she taught me how to use the nipple for good and not evil.
That's so important.
But I couldn't believe it was so difficult. Like, yeah. What is wrong with my kid?
Right.
Oh,
right.
It's not your kid. It's you. Here's how you have to. She was kind of mean, but she really was helpful.
And this is somebody from the hospital?
No, it was just someone who happened to be
driving past. Wow.
Visiting another patient.
That's crazy. Never heard of that before. This is, I would put this, Wendy, under the category of sad news.
Oh.
One of our favorite TV spokespeople is no longer going to be doing that sort of work anymore. The people over at Dos Equis Beer are retiring the most interesting man in the world.
No, if he's the most interesting man in the world, who are they going to get to replace him?
This is nothing but upsetting to me because
stay thirsty, my friend.
I love that guy.
Who doesn't?
I love the commercials. They've been, you know how long they've been a campaign?
No.
9 years.
It seems longer if you want to know the truth. Not that that's bad. It just seems like it's been going on for longer than that.
The brewers over at Dos Equis Beer, which is Spanish for two Equis, have decided... Did you know that?
No.
There's a fun fact. Dos Equis translates to two Equis. I think that's fingers, isn't it? Are Equis fingers?
X's.
Oh, is that what that
two
is?
X's?
No.
Thank you, Kevin,
that makes
by the
more
way.
Sense.
I took French.
Two fingers beer. What would that be?
You're sticking up an Equi at me.
I always thought it was fingers. I have no idea why.
Why?
Like
no
a tequila
idea.
Thing? I'm drinking two.
I think so.
Two fingers.
I don't know why I would have met.
I think
that's
like phalanges or something.
Yeah,
like
those
that?
Are two dos phalanges beer is what I'm thinking of.
Dados. Isn't it dados?
That could be.
That's toes.
I don't know.
What is toe?
Dado.
Is that what it is?
I think so.
It's like a different language, this Spanish. The brewers over at Dos Equis Beer have decided that maybe reigning the most interesting man in the world, it's time to do just that. As a result, the tan, suave, impressively bearded, most interesting man in the world is about to embark on his final journey over the next few months before fading into the pantheon of advertising icons. But the man who jaunts around the world on unenviable adventures, while often surrounded by beautiful women, not often, always, certainly made life more interesting and successful for the previously under-the-radar Mexican beer brand. Now, they were kind of well-known, but I think his presence on those commercials really did tip it in. I think all of a sudden people really paid attention because of that guy, don't
because
you?
Because of Jonathan Goldsmith?
That's
when
the
I
guy.
Know his real name, it doesn't look like he's the most interesting man in the world.
I don't know that much about... I know his name is John... The actor's name is
that.
Jonathan Goldsmith.
Should have been Rico Suave, although that's taken.
Dos Equis, which is owned by Heineken. Did you know that?
Yes.
Tripled its business since the campaign was introduced.
Here, so let's get rid of them.
Well, that's the weird thing in the world of advertising is they kind of sense when something has run its course. So even though they tripled their sales, somebody high up there realized, okay, maybe this is getting a little old. Although I don't see it that way. And here's what's weird about advertising. I love the guy who plays the most interesting man in the world. I love the ad campaign. It has not made me ever drink Dos Equis beer because I thought it meant two fingers, probably. Maybe that's why. I know. This tastes like fingers. What am I drinking?
It worked for me.
Did you buy some because of it?
If I was out and I felt like doing something other than the typical light beer, I'm like, oh, yeah, give me a Dos Equis.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You would do that?
Because I'd think of him and I'm like, I just need something different.
Bill, you're an actor. Let me ask you a question about commercials.
Yeah.
Why is it that every once in a while there's like a run where one actor, and it usually seems to be a guy, ends up landing three or four high-profile spots at a time?
That's the weirdest thing in the world.
It's happened. I can think of two or three times recently.
Like who?
It's going to be guys whose names we don't know. But
like the stupid piano-playing Dell guy?
No, because he was only in the Dell commercials. But all of a sudden, if you're watching a lot of TV, you'll notice, you'll go, boy, I just saw that guy in a car commercial.
Right.
I saw that guy in a bank commercial.
He's a cable man.
Right.
There's like a heavier guy with dark hair recently. You know, they're kind of nondescript. I mean, they're actors.
Right.
But it seems like once in a while, there's like an actor's got three or four at a time.
I've not noticed that.
Oh,
seriously.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, there's a guy here in town, my friend Bill, I used to do stand-up with him, and then he transitioned into voiceovers. He was the guy who did all the Why Ask Why, the Bud Dry commercials. He did them for like 5 years. at the same time he got that. And he was new to the world of voiceovers. He just tried it on a lark because he was doing stand-up and he thought, I could probably make a couple extra bucks doing this. So he went and he got the Why Ask Why Bud Dry commercials.
Good
then
score.
He got Pop Secret. Then he got Disney Channel. Then he got something else. And within a short span of time, he had three or four or five major, major accounts. And he was like the most popular guy in voiceovers.
And making a ton of money.
He did all right. Yeah.
I didn't know that Jonathan Goldsmith, did you know what he was before he was the most interesting man?
No.
He was a garbage truck driver.
Seriously?
He had a series of villainous appearances in Westerns.
I could see that.
And then he went out of Hollywood's limelight altogether. And he tried out for the most interesting man role at the suggestion of his then agent and now wife, Barbara. With some help from his friend Fernando Lamas, which
really?
Is kind of, you can see that then.
There's some Fernando Lamas influence in The Most Interesting Man in the World.
So he was friends with Fernando Lamas, an Argentine-born actor, the father of Lorenzo Lamas.
Yeah.
And he adopted that accent for the role. And his impression delighted the audition room, but he didn't get the part right away.
There's a line in one of the commercials, and I'm paraphrasing it a little bit, but he says when he attempts something with 50-50 chances, his odds are 80-20. And I just think that's so well crafted and well done. How could somebody just by the mere presence of their own self increase their own odds from 50-50 to 80-20?
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
But so they were going to go with a younger guy, and later that day they said, you know, how can the most interesting man in the world be so young?
Got to have some history.
So the casting director called him back, and he got the part.
Oh, I'm so glad.
What an interesting story.
Yeah. I'm going to miss him. I love that guy. Didn't influence my decision in purchasing Dos Equis beer, but I thought he was one of the best.
And they are getting a new guy.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yes. Executives from Heineken, the ad campaign, will continue with a new actor.
That's not going to be as good.
They declined to identify the new star or share details about the plot lines other than to say they're seeking to contemporize the campaign.
No, I'm
it's
not happy.
It's going to be Norm MacDonald and
Daryl Hammond.
And they
Jim
got
Gaffigan.
A new... Oh, that's the last one?
Jim Gaffigan is the new KFC, the new colonel.
Norm MacDonald is the best colonel.
But now they've already said, they've announced, and I didn't realize this in the beginning over at KFC, that job is extremely temporary because they've already announced the next two guys after Jim Gaffigan.
Who?
They already know. I can't remember who it is.
Because that intrigues me that they keep running through people because you'll be watching it and then all of a sudden, wait, that's not Norm.
Yeah.
Norm was the best colonel.
I think so too.
Because he is crazy. And I think the colonel was crazy.
I know. All right. A break, some news, and then a big show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy. You've heard of mixed marriages, you know, when you have like a Sox fan and a Cubs fan.
Sometimes it's people of different races. Sometimes it's people of different religions, right?
What about different political views?
That could never work, ever.
See, I agree with you, Bill, but we're about to find out why it can work. And Dave Willis is on the line with us. Dave's been named an author to watch in 2016. And you and your wife, Ashley, founded StrongerMarriages.org. There's a marriage app as ways to encourage couples to build stronger marriages. You're a pastor. What haven't you done, Dave Willis?
Well, I haven't slept a lot lately because we also have four kids in the mix with all that other stuff.
Oh. Well, the books, The Seven Laws of Love, it sounds like you're the man to talk to when you have someone in a marriage who is...
Wrong.
I didn't know how to put it correctly.
Right.
How do you make it work?
Oh, man, it's tough. It's tough, but this is happening more and more. You know, we get a lot of people reach out to us online saying, what do I do? You know, my spouse is totally wrong, like you said, in their political views. And it is tough because, like, right now in this election cycle in particular, everything is so polarized and people are just passionate like never before about what they believe and who they dislike. And so if... It's one thing when it's happening at the office. You can banter back and forth at the water cooler. But when you're sleeping on the opposite side of the bed with somebody who's on the opposite side of the political spectrum as you, it creates some tension in the home. And so we're just trying to help people navigate that.
Do you recommend putting a body pillow in between the two of you?
A body pillow might be a good place to start, or separate bedrooms. No, I mean, I think the first place to start is just to realize, look, let's keep this in perspective. our commitment to each other is longer than a four-year term or a 2-4-year term. So who we're sending to the White House isn't nearly as important as this house and how we're loving each other, the commitment we have to each other. And we don't have to always agree on everything, but we have to agree on the fact that, our commitment to each other is unshakable, and our commitment is much bigger than our differences and our disagreements. And if you start with that, then everything else tends to come into perspective.
Dave, I know that there are countless couples that fit this description that you're describing. The ones that come to mind for me right away, and I'm sure for other people, are James Carville and Mary Matlin, extreme to the left on one side, extreme to the right on the other, and yet they seem to be able to pull it off. What are they doing correctly, do you think?
Getting a paycheck?
Is that what it is? Is it money?
No, man, I'd like to interview them and find out, because, you know, my wife and I are we're on the same page politically, and so I just kind of watch in amazement at couples who make it work when they are on opposite ends of the aisle with this. And I think that part of it is recognizing that, all right, this is going to be one of those areas where we're not going to agree, we're not going to convince each other. So when we do talk about it, like, let's at least have fun with it. Let's at least do it in a way that we're not taking it personally. If it was me and my wife, I would totally be putting my candidate's bumper sticker on her car and seeing how long it took for her to figure out. And then I would totally expect for her to do the same to me, and then, you know, go an extra step and put me on the robocall list for her candidate so I'm getting text messages all day. So I think you've got to be able to laugh. At the end of the day, you've got to be able to joke about it, remind yourself, look, we're best friends, we're united in our love for each other, and we can laugh about the places that we have a lot of disagreement. And I assume that that's some of the things that they're doing in their marriage.
And not every couple agrees on everything.
Sure.
I mean, everyone says opposites attract. I don't know if that's really 100% true. You have to have the same goals and values. But Donald Trump has changed a lot of people's views on how politics are run in this whole election. More people are paying more attention. But you mentioned putting your candidate's sticker on their car, a bumper sticker on their car. That, to me, is a way to do it, diffusing the argument. Because if you do sit there and discuss it, it's probably going to get heated.
Exactly. And I think that's when you got to realize that in marriage, nobody wins a debate. You know, so leave the debates on TV between the candidates. Because in marriage, you guys are unified. So even in the places where you disagree, you've got to have mutual respect and realize that at the end of the day, we're either going to win together or we're going to lose together. And so if I have to win an argument but lose some trust or lose something in this relationship as a result, then I've lost no matter what I've done to get my point across. And so if you can't have fun with it, if it starts getting to the place where it's heated and where it turns into a minefield and everywhere you step it feels like it's creating tension, then you might just need to back away and say, you know what, we're just going to agree to disagree, and we're going to agree to not go there right now because it's not leading us to a good place in our relationship, and our relationship's much more important than our candidate.
Dave, stay where you are. We've got Dave Willis on the line, best-selling author of The 7 Laws of Love, telling us what we do when our husband or our wife, our boyfriend or our girlfriend believes in a different political candidate than we do. If you have any calls, if you have any questions or comments, easy to reach us, 312-981-7200. We'll pick this up in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. There's the music.
I don't know how the button got turned off on my meatball. Must have fallen on it.
I guess it did.
Happy National Meatball Day today. We are talking to Dave Willis, who is a marriage expert, an author, a pastor. His book, The 7 Laws of Love. And we are talking about if you're in a mixed marriage, and we did forget about a Bears-Packer marriage, too.
I don't see that working at all. Sorry.
Someone has texted us, Dave, my husband is a Republican, I'm a Democrat. We respect our differences. We are best friends, and more than that, we made a commitment not to get into heated discussions. Someone else says, if politics is that big of an issue in your marriage, then you have bigger problems than that. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think those are good thoughts. I think that you've got to kind of agree what the ground rules are, you know, here ahead of time. That, like, all right, we're going into this, and these are conversations to have before marriage to know where the other one stands on big issues. You know, people say don't talk about politics, don't talk about religion. I say if you're going to enter into a lifelong relationship with somebody, I think it's important to talk about all those things in great detail to know kind of what worldview is this person coming from, where do we agree, and in those places that we don't agree, can we live in harmony even in the tension of that disagreement? And it's granted, not as big a deal as like a Bears-Packers marriage that you threw out. I think some things are just impossible to overcome. But when it comes to these political differences, you just have to say, you know what? Every time there's an election cycle, we're not going to have to walk on eggshells around our house. We're not going to pick fights over stupid reasons. We're going to know that we're going to be supporting different candidates. We can talk about it. We can even have fun with it. But we're just going to refuse to waste energy fighting over it. And if you kind of set the ground rules ahead of time, I think it makes for a whole lot smoother transition when we enter into an election cycle.
Dave, I've heard over the years from several families who say that when there's big family get-togethers, you know, Thanksgiving, Christmas, the holidays, there's a family pact that they cannot discuss religion or politics. And that's all well and good with aunts and uncles and cousins. But when it's the person you sleep with, the rules are a little different, right?
Right. It's definitely a little different because, you know, you get together with these folks at Thanksgiving and you're looking around the table a lot of times saying, if I wasn't related to these people,
I would not hang out with them
even once a year.
I say that every year. Word for word, I say that.
Word for word, you're like, how did I come out of this family? But your spouse, you know, you chose this person and this person chose you. And the level of intimacy in a marriage, for it to work, you have to be able to talk about anything. You have to have total transparency in marriage. You can't have these places where it's just, you don't know what the other's thinking. Now, it gets delicate when you know what the other's thinking, and it's the complete opposite of what you're thinking, like we're talking about with this political discussion. So it's still okay to talk about it. It's still okay to try to understand where your spouse is coming from. And in that process, you know, your perspectives might even change and evolve a little bit along the way. But just refuse to fight about it. Because in marriage, nobody wins a fight. I'm always saying you either win together or you lose together. So the moment it turns into a fight, you've both lost.
Yep.
Just don't let it elevate to that place.
Maybe have a safe word, like our safe word is Benghazi.
Oh, God.
Hey, I think a safe word, that's a whole separate talk, but I'm for it.
All right, I got to read your book, The Seven Laws of Love, because, I'm listening to this. We're talking to Dave Willis, and you set the rules. I may have problems sticking to the rules that we've set, and sometimes the blame game comes up. And if you see the world in different political views, does that happen where you say, see, you voted for that candidate, and look what happened?
I think we all do that. You know, you get cut off by somebody in traffic, and then you see they have a bumper sticker of your candidate, and you give them a pat. But you get cut off by somebody that has a sticker of somebody else, and you're cussing at them like, this is what's wrong with America.
Right.
So I just think, just in general, we could all stand to have some more grace and compassion for each other.
Dave,
especially in marriage.
Listeners are checking in. We're at 312-981-7200. Janet has a story for you, if we can take this pretty quickly. Let's see what she's got. Janet, hi.
Hey,
go
Janet.
Ahead. You're on with Dave Willis.
Hi. Yes. Hey. My brother disowned me, blocked me from Facebook, wouldn't accept my calls for the 8 years that Obama won. And
seriously?
Anytime I wrote anything about anything that come up politics, my brother would have to make vulgar comments or, you know, this is what happened because of Obama. And I even tried to text him and tell him, you know, and even on Facebook, I'd write him and tell him, you know, brother, we disagree, but I still love you, and I wish you would still, you know, keep in contact with me. And he would still come back with the, you know, Obama thing. And I'm still undecided. I don't know. I'm going between both parties. I'm trying to figure out who's going to be the best for all of us.
Well, don't vote for someone just so you and your brother can be Facebook friends again, Janet.
I would never do that. But, you know, I see both sides. You know, I see everybody's frustrated, you know, to the point that they're following Trump. And his demeanor, everything may change if he is elected, you know. More power to him if he is elected and he can prove himself to everyone that he was right. But, you know, I like everyone's issues, you know, the way they, you know, see things. I can relate to both sides. I'm just still at a quandary as far as who to vote for right now.
But, Dave, to your point, it does. It destroys not only relationships with your...
Her brother is right, 815 just said.
Oh, you're all right. You're getting texts on your brother's side, Janet. That's not a good sign.
I'm listening and he's going to probably put something on Facebook because he finally did friend me again, and we are talking again, but I refuse to talk politics with my, you know, my partner, my relatives. It just is.
You're never going to win. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks, Janet. Go on, Dave. What were you going to say?
Well, first, Janet, I'm sorry that you're going through that. I just hate that for her. And I see that all the time, sadly. It's like we get this worldview where we got all this misplaced anger. You know, we're not happy, and we blame everything that's wrong with our life on a political candidate. And then we start to demonize every single person on earth who happens to support that political candidate. And it just creates these terrible and unnecessary breaks in families where I'm like, seriously, we're going to cut off the people in our life over something like this. And personally, I wish Facebook sometimes had like a political mute button. All those friends that are, you know, posting nothing but political stuff over and over, you know, for months and months, and you're just thinking, man, it's so hard to like you right now. I wish I could just mute that until the election's over. But if it ever...
My husband tries to mute me.
People off.
He holds the remote up to me and hits the mute button. It doesn't work.
That doesn't work.
Oh, you tried it.
But Dave, isn't this a sign of our generation? Was there ever a couple that broke up because one of them enjoyed Calvin Coolidge over the other? That never happened, did it?
I don't think that it did. I just cannot imagine it looking like, you know, like it does now. I think that, gosh, we've placed too much importance. Not that this stuff isn't important. I mean, obviously, do your research, you know, pick the candidate that you believe is going to support your values and make America better. And I mean, do all of those things. But at the end of the day, our relationships are what define our lives. And I spend enough time around people on their deathbeds to know that when you get to the end, I never had anybody wanting to talk about politics on their deathbed.
True.
They're talking about their relationships. The greatest joys in their life are a result of their relationships, and their deepest regrets are a result of breaks in their relationships. And I have a feeling that Janet's brother, many years from now, on his deathbed, he's probably not going to be wanting to talk about who he voted for or how Obama did this or that, but I bet he's going to regret the fact that he cut his sister off for the better part of a decade over a disagreement about politics. So I think whatever we can do to promote building bridges in our relationships instead of building walls to separate each other from people we love, we only lose when we start cutting people off who love us, when we start making a disagreement more important than the relationship itself. So it's not that politics isn't important. It's just it's not nearly as important as your family. Nearly as important as your marriage. So just keep things in perspective.
Dave, wouldn't it be ironic if when Janet's brother is on his deathbed, if it's Obama who turns off the ventilator, wouldn't that be a crazy switch at the end there?
You are twisted. You know that?
That's good.
Dave, we have a lot of people wanting to know where your pastor at your Church of Love, because we would all like to attend it. You're out in Augusta, Georgia, but you can go to strongermarriages.org and find out more. We have to get the 7 laws of love, and we'd love to talk to you again, because I'll tell you, if you're involved in a marriage, it's not always peachy keen. And I think if we learn anything from talking to you is, on your deathbed, I know as morbid as that might sound, you're not going to talk about who you voted or who forgot to start the dishwasher.
Hmm?
No, the stuff that we get so preoccupied with day to day is not going to be the stuff that really matters in the end. So don't wait until the end to figure that out.
Absolutely. And the last text of the day, all I know is my daughter and I share the same political beliefs, so we totally cancel out my wife's vote in any election.
Oh, how about that? That's perfect. Dave, great talking to you. Thanks so much for being here, Dave.
Hey, thanks for having me. This was great.
Absolutely. It's Dave Willis, the 7 Laws of Love.
We got to keep him on...
on retainer?
Yes.
Yep, I think so, too.
I don't know if he wore braces, but we need to keep him on retainer.
A break, some news, more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Who likes to eat? I would say everyone.
Wendy, at our house, we eat almost every day. That's how much we enjoy the food at our house. Yep. Sure.
We would like to introduce to you our first guest of anonymity.
Yeah, we've never had a guest who, because of their job, we've had to cover up. For people who watch us on the internet, you can usually watch the show, and you're usually very disappointed in what you see.
I know, so just stop watching altogether. I got into radio so people couldn't see me. Sometimes our hair is bedhead. You know, come on.
Right.
Quit watching.
Penny Pollack, because of her job, she's the dining editor over at Chicago Magazine, and she needs to remain anonymous because I'm guessing, Penny, what would happen is you would go into a restaurant and you would be treated specially because they would want to leave an impression.
And it's so tempting.
Yeah. Sure.
But, I agree with Wendy. You know, I have a face for radio.
Oh,
so
stop. I did not.
Fine.
You can't agree with
why.
Me. But so being anonymous makes it pretty impossible for a restaurant to up their game when they see you walk in. And that's obviously the importance of that.
Exactly. And it has, there's quite an evolution over the years. When I started as the assistant in the department that I'm now in the big seat.
Dining editor.
I'm the big mouth or whatever. We always made reservations in other names, but dining was so much more traditional, and we would very almost huddle at the table so no one would notice us. And then when the waiter or waitress left the table, we'd secretly pass the plates around so that they wouldn't know we were reviewers. And looking back on it, it's kind of a cartoon.
Do you think of it more of a cartoon
for
huh?
people looking at that table? You
yeah.
mean,
yeah, like did the waiter or waitress notice that I was eating fish instead of steak, which I started with?
Mm-hmm.
But people share, right? Other than Bill, he will only share with his family.
Back in the day,
no,
really?
No. Now you can barely navigate a table because there are so many little plates going on.
Yep.
And everyone's poking their fork. And I think we should get extender forks, and then we wouldn't have to.
They make those.
Let's do it.
That's the future.
Because I have one that it was a joke gift, and sometimes I see my husband use it as a back scratcher.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about what you called the little plates in just a little bit, but explain this to me. When somebody who's critiquing a restaurant or particular food, when you go in, you don't want one thing or two things. You want a variety of things so you get a better flavor of what that restaurant's guidelines are, what their scope is. Huh?
Exactly. And whoever the reviewer is, whether it's me or one of my wonderful critics, that person is the boss of the table.
Yeah.
So I suggest what people might like to eat. Mm-hmm. No one can order. There's no duplications allowed. So if you want steak and Wendy wants steak, flip a coin.
Really?
Only one of you is going to get it.
But then I have order envy, and then if he gets the steak and I don't, I'm going to want the steak.
I know. But, you know, he'll give you a bite.
No, Bill.
Nope,
only
share,
family.
Share.
In fact, it's great we have Penny Pollack in here, the dining editor for Chicago Magazine, because, Bill, we were just talking about this last week. Do you remember there are some times where you'll be between two items and you ask the server which way to go, or frequently you'll get the special? What about that? Do you know anything? Is it the special just food they need to get rid of because they have an abundance from the day before?
The special might be fish that they ordered in super fresh and they want it to sell that night. The special, I'm just thinking of this right now, could be pop-up. We have all these pop-up restaurants. It could be a pop-up dish. Maybe the chef is trying it out to see if it should make the menu. I would say there, whatever the special is, there's a limited number. I just stayed at Green River a week or two ago, and there's a Slagle Farm, 100 and million days, dry-aged, you know, ribeye steak.
Bone-in?
Bone-in.
Oh, yeah. Now
and
you're
there's,
talking.
There's only one for the night.
What?
How can that be?
Well, get there early.
So the waiter kind of makes it all exciting, like it's almost a game.
Sure.
You still have the steak. I want the steak. Did you sell the one steak?
That seems to be poor planning, though, doesn't it? Kind of.
They always sell it, I bet.
Yeah, I guess they would.
They do.
Yeah. So what came up a week or so ago is I was saying a lot of times in a restaurant situation, if my mind is not made up between two or three or four items, I'll say to the waiter or waitress, surprise me. Whatever you think is best, bring it. I'm fine with that.
I do that all the time, especially on desserts.
Yeah.
Because dessert is ultimately everyone's kind of full and the table's discussing it. And this guy wants chocolate and this guy wants apricot. And I'll just say, bring two desserts.
Mm-hmm.
And that works out well.
Why not? Live it up.
Looks like you've been doing it right all these years.
Yeah, I guess
Bill.
So. Good.
I think so.
Finally have confirmation of this. Penny Pollack is here. She is the dining editor for Chicago Magazine. We're going to talk more about her career and about food. And if you want to jump in, please do. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Penny Pollack is here. Penny is the dining editor for Chicago Magazine, and she's talking about her career and food in general in the city. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200.
Bill, Penny also mentioned that a restaurant special could be kind of like these new pop-up restaurants that are happening where a chef might just want to try out a new dish. You're a big fan of that pop-up restaurant at the Nordstrom building.
Yeah, up in the food court at Nordstrom, they have an open space that is a revolving restaurant situation. It's a different restaurant every day, and it's to me, it's like opening up a Christmas present.
You just told the dining editor of Chicago Magazine something she didn't know.
Were you not aware of this?
In the Nordstrom store or the mall?
In the mall, there's a food court up on the...
I know the food court intimately.
Yeah, so so it's become one of my favorite places because it is something new every day, and I go and check it out. I don't eat there every day, but every day it's, you know, it can be Caribbean food one day and Mexican food the next or seafood the next. I love it.
Is that new?
They've been doing it about 2 months now.
Okay. Okay.
And someone has texted, does your guest, Penny Pollack, only review restaurants that require a reservation? That's a good question.
Absolutely not. And there's a growing movement against reservations anyway. Lots of places are just getting in line, like all over Randolph Street. Oh, my God.
But, Penny, you know what? A reservation used to mean you'd make a reservation for 7:30. You'd get there a little bit before 7:30, and at 7:30 they'd call your name and you were escorted to your table. It doesn't play that way anymore.
It really doesn't. You could wait in the bar.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's where the money is for the restaurant.
Right, right.
And a friend of theirs will come by and take your 7:30 reservation.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And I would, too, if I owned a restaurant.
Well, here's how we know, for instance, Jeff Ruby, my chief dining critic, mm-hmm. is anonymous because he had a reservation at C Chicago, that place that took over Kiefer's spot.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's very expensive, she pretentious. And he had a reservation, but a politician came in kind of at the same time. Mm-hmm. And bye-bye, Jeff's table.
Oh, no.
I mean, we make reservations in other names.
Yeah.
Of course.
Do you use goofy names? That just proves that we're doing it right.
Anonymous, yeah. Do you give wacky names every once in a while just for the fun of it?
We used to, but, you know, you have to pick a name that you can remember.
Oh, right. There's that. That's true.
That's a good idea. Joe is on the line. Joe, do you have a question for Penny Pollack, dining editor for Chicago Magazine?
I do. I eat out quite a bit in the city, and there's only two restaurant critics I depend on, and that's Phil Vitale and Penny Pollack.
Thank you.
And I wanted to ask Ms. Pollack, when you review a restaurant that is really bad, do you tell that restaurant, say, here's where you failed, here's what you got to improve on if you want to make it? Or do you just let them see it in the review?
I let them see it in the review.
Ouch! That is cold!
Telling them is up to the public.
Oh.
And their PR people, or they got to figure it out for themselves. Otherwise, that puts me in the role of consultant.
Sure.
And I'm not a consultant.
That makes sense.
That does make sense.
If a poor review comes out, and we don't like to do bad reviews, if you check through our archives, unless a restaurant is, if it's a really big name place and they totally blow it, then mm-hmm. we're going to give them a bad review. But if we're disappointed by the little guy that opened a Puerco Tacos Only that we might have done for Budget Beat, but we don't like it, I'm just leaving it alone. There's just no point. We want to tell our readership what's good, where to, you know, where they should eat, what they might really enjoy.
That was a great question.
Thanks.
Happy eating.
Penny, what about this? I always think if I owned a restaurant, I would want to know from my customers what I'm doing right and what I'm doing wrong. My wife and I have been in several situations where things weren't quite up to snuff. And I always say, I'm going to say something to the manager. And my wife begs me, no, please don't. But like I said, if I was running a restaurant, I would want a potential repeat customer to say, here's the reason I'm not coming back. Try to fix it. Is there anything wrong with that?
I'm totally on your side, but we're in the minority.
Yeah.
And here's my argument. in favor of telling the restaurant you were disappointed. First of all, as you said, you want to know.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, and it's a social situation other than other different retail. Like if you go out and buy something at Nordstrom's after your pop-up lunch at the mall, mm-hmm. and you get this wonderful shirt home and it's frayed or the button's not, something's wrong with it. Are you going to take it back?
Mm-hmm.
Of course you are.
Mm-hmm.
And Nordstrom's is going to make it right for you.
Absolutely.
And then Nordstrom's earned you as a repeat customer.
Yeah.
The restaurant wants to know, and I have this argument with people constantly. If I don't like the table, I say so.
Yeah.
If I don't like anything, the restaurant wants to know the meat is cooked well done. I ordered it rare. Even if I think the portion's really kind of small, I'll have someone else at the table say something.
Really?
I don't like to be real obvious.
Yeah, sure.
But I absolutely am in favor of the customer telling the restaurant.
Good.
Because the restaurant wants to know.
I was just going to say, I would imagine, Bill, you're right about that. The owner would like to know that.
You would think.
I do it in kind of a passive-aggressive way. We go to this place all the time, and I ordered a Denver omelet with cheddar. I got Denver with American cheese, and when the waitress came back and said, is everything okay? I said, you know what? It's pretty good, but I just wanted you to know it's not cheddar, it's American. And she said, oh, I'll make you another one. And I said, no, I'm good. And my husband goes, why'd you even tell her if you didn't want a new one? I said, because I didn't want to sit and eat my omelet after the kids and you are finished. Should I have not said anything?
Your timing, it's all in the timing.
I have no timing. I have none. Ask Bill, ask my husband, my kids.
If you knew on the first bite, I think you should have just said, yoo-hoo. Yeah.
Really? Now, the one you said about the portions being too small, that's a tough one. My wife and I ate in a restaurant 2 years ago. The food was outstanding, but we were so hungry when we were done. And I don't know how you address that without sounding like a pig, you know? But it was about a third of the amount of food that we should have gotten.
Did you stop at Portillo's on the way home?
We had to, yeah. That was our only alternative, yeah.
Some places are like that, though. If it's a rich dish, they're not going to give you a giant portion of it.
But I demand 6 McNuggets, not 4, Penny. I want all 6. It was Mexican food, and I learned the word taquitos means, in this case, extremely small tacos, because it was an order of 3 of them, and each one of them was bite-sized.
Well, the only way to combat that, it's really not too cool to say I was expecting more food. But
yeah.
I've learned when I order.
Okay, Chubbo. That's what they're going to say to you.
I know.
I ask if it's, you know, there's going to be pieces. You're not ordering your steak dinner. You're ordering fritters.
Right.
I ask how many there are.
Oh, you can ask that? Yeah, why not? Sure.
Especially to just touch on my small plates issue.
Yeah.
Everyone loves to share.
Yeah.
And so many small plates come with 3 things on it instead of
enough.
4.
Because 3 is pretty presenting.
But generally, there's an even number
of people
at the table. Nothing against all you single folks or people who like to go out by yourselves or whatever. I'm all for it. But if I'm the waiter or waitress and I'm recommending that you're just going to love the egg rolls,
mm-hmm.
and there's 4 of you, and then I bring you 3,
mm-hmm. that is bothersome.
Yep.
That's one of my pet peeves.
And then they play out, it's Darwin's survival of the fittest right there at the table, isn't it? Let's see who's the weakest link here at the table.
She's Penny Pollack. She's been the dining editor for Chicago Magazine for over 20 years, with the magazine for even longer than that. And someone in closing has a great little question here. Can a food editor ever go to a restaurant and just enjoy the food, or is she always in review mode?
I'm never... not
really.
I try to be social, and I encourage my friends to decide what they want to order.
Yeah.
And they won't pick the restaurant, and they won't pick the entree, and they won't. So I'm forced into this role when I'm not working.
Yeah.
And then if they really do leave me alone, that part of me comes out anyway.
Yeah.
Sure. See, because I would like to go out to dinner with Penny Pollack because she would tell us where to go, what to order.
Yep.
It would make our lives easier and
way
hers much
easier,
harder.
Way easier.
Thanks.
Great to finally meet you, Penny.
You too.
It really is. Penny Pollack is her name. Dining editor for Chicago Magazine. Pick it up. You will enjoy it. We'll take a quick break and then more show coming your way after that. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We have got such a busy show today, and part two is just as busy, if not more so. We're going to talk about the Chicago Flower and Garden Show, which is going on over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk ping pong.
Mm-hmm. Which is going on constantly.
There are two times I thought of you. I was at a side job yesterday, and a different office, not the one I was going to, has just been rehabbed.
Yeah.
And as I was walking in, there were two guys playing ping pong. They had a ping pong table, a picnic table, a hanging basket.
Where did they work? At Heaven?
It's what it looked like.
That would be everything I would need.
I don't even know what the company is, but I thought of you immediately.
All that's missing is a Slurpee machine, and that's the most ideal place ever to work.
They may have one.
Really?
They have a bar in there as well.
Wow.
Because I was doing voice work, and I was wondering how come them yelling at playing ping pong wasn't bleeding into my sound booth.
Right.
Although sound booth is soundproof.
You would hope. Right.
And then I met a new couple of people in downtown LaGrange when I went to see my son Michael play guitar. And they invited another friend back to their house after hours party, and they have a ping pong table. Ping pong is surrounding
it's
me.
The sport of kings, Wendy. Don't kid yourself. There's a new
There's
a new place opening up here in Chicago called Spin. I've been to the preview of it. It looks fantastic. We'll explain more later, 205.
All right, and some deaths in the news. There was a death notice that came across my house last night about 10:30 or so. Young Michael Mack said, "Oh, Mom, I'm feeling really bad. It looks like a pretty important person in the world of rock and roll died."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Who?"
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "George Martin."
Yeah.
And I said, "Oh, that's too bad. Well, he was 90 years old, and I don't know if it's true because Ringo Starr tweeted it, but his Twitter account was hacked 2 weeks ago, so I don't know if I should believe it or not." And Michael was torn as to what to do, so we were Googling, and there were no announcements that he was dead yet.
Right. Ringo Starr broke the news on Twitter, but as you pointed out,
a hacked account. You didn't know if
you
could trust it.
You don't know if it's legit or not, but very sad. Really one of the most influential producers in the history of music, George Martin. An incredible job with the Beatles over the years. He did some other jobs prior to and after, but he'll always be known as the Beatles producer, and that is a sad story.
And was I working with you when we interviewed him?
I never got to interview him, so you must not have.
It must have been Tony Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
Because I am embarrassed to say that it was pitched, "Do you want to talk to George Martin of Beatles fame and all that?" And I said, "Well, yeah, sure." I just, before getting him on the phone, thought that he was just some guy who wrote a Beatles book.
Oh, no, he had quite a bit to do with the orchestration. And
every album except for what, Let It Be?
I'm trying to remember what his discography was. But yeah, there were one or two Beatles albums that he did not have, or maybe more now that I think about it. But he was called, and it's really funny because many people were referred to in those days as the fifth Beatle, but he rightfully was the fifth Beatle. He had a lot to say when it came to the final sound of some of the best Beatles songs of all times. Although there was a guy, Murray the K, that was a radio DJ, and they called him the fifth Beatle. There was a guy walking through a street in Liverpool one day who said, "I like the Beatles," and they called that guy the fifth Beatle. So back in the 60s and into the 70s, all you had to do was show up and somebody would call you the fifth Beatle. But George Martin rightfully so was.
Truly was. And then when we were doing some Googling last night, there was a letter that allegedly John Lennon wrote saying that, you know, how he's mad at George Martin and Paul McCartney.
Really?
John wasn't nice sometimes. He got in little hissy fits more frequently than the others.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Steve Bertrand told me something that I guess is amusing. It was to me anyway, is that a lot of people were very upset yesterday about the death of George Martin, but not because of who he is. They thought it was the guy who writes the Game of Thrones stories.
That was my first reaction.
Does he have middle initials? Because that's
R-R,
that's what we kept looking at, and I'm like, who's this guy?
George R.R. Martin.
He was. I'm like, God, George Martin looked good because this guy's way younger than I thought the real George Martin was, the fifth Beatle.
And his name, RR, is because his mom is a seal. Did you know that about him? That's the way his mom makes noises.
Har har.
That guy is still alive, so don't worry. George R.R. Martin's still with us.
But Sir George Martin, because he was knighted, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are just a lot of, if you Google a lot of these things, John Lennon letters reveal bitterness towards George Martin.
Yeah.
And Paul McCartney. Yeah. And probably George Harrison, and probably Ringo, and probably Paul.
Friends of mine from where I grew up bought the rights to the movie Hard Day's Night. When Hard Day's Night came out on videotape, it was their production, and George Martin had a lot to do with the transferring of it from cinema to VHS and to beta. So they got to work pretty closely with him, and they said that they weren't sure what they would encounter because he was a pretty worldly guy, and these were guys, you know, who just happened to purchase the rights, and they thought, oh, I hope this goes well. And as it turns out, everything they said about him was fantastic, that, you know, he wanted nothing but for Hard Day's Night to live on forever and make this print nice. And they ended up writing a book with him. There have been so many books about the Beatles written, but I think having his input, because he was such a major part of them, that's what you want on your side.
Well, there was a book released, I believe, in 2012, the John Lennon Letters. It showed some handwritten notes from John and Yoko and Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And in one of the angrier missives included in the John Lennon letters, the then bitter ex-Beatle John lays into George Martin for supposedly taking too much credit for the group's sound.
Oh, really?
He also smacks the producer down for giving McCartney too much credit for some of the songwriting. When people ask me questions about what did George Martin really do for you, John Lennon says, I have only one answer. What does he do now? I noticed you had no answer for that. It's not a put-down, it's the truth, wrote Lennon, who had brought in Phil Spector to redo Martin's work on Let It Be and then continued to work with Spector as a solo artist.
That's so disturbing.
It is.
Because when you achieve the things that those guys achieved, the Beatles achieved, you would think there's plenty of accolades to spread around. You know, it didn't have to be a competition. It was obviously a community effort. I don't know why John Lennon would look at it that way.
Oh, he had some other things, too. Well, because he wanted to, you know, be larger than Jesus.
But, well, yeah.
Revolution number 9, John Lennon says, which I recorded with Yoko, plus the help of Ringo, George and George Martin. Here's Lennon saying, it was my concept fully, Lennon wrote in a letter co-addressed to the Melody Maker interviewer, for Martin to state that he was painting a sound picture is pure hallucination. Ask any of the other people involved. The final editing Yoko and I did alone, which took 4 hours. Don't do that. Just be thankful.
I guess because the Beatles themselves were so talented, you could get kind of, I shouldn't say anybody to produce their albums, but it would have been hard to ruin them. But the fact that George Martin was so good at what he did and so inventive made them a great group even better, you know?
You have to give credit where credit is due, and he definitely was the fifth Beatle, not Murray the K.
Murray the K was not the fifth Beatle.
It wasn't even the seventh one. He was no Beatle.
I don't think he was a Beatle. I don't think so. We're going to take a quick break, and then we have more show for you planned. Stay where you are, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
And I guess we didn't forget Pete Best, but yes, he could be the fifth
also
Beatle.
Also called the fifth Beatle.
We got to.
Stu Sutcliffe was at some point called the fifth Beatle.
He shouldn't have been.
He should not have been.
He should have been the asterisk Beatle.
Jerry Taft has been called the fifth Beatle.
Now they're pushing it.
Ryan Sandberg was the fifth Beatle.
No.
Nope. They throw the term around, Wendy, and it makes me uncomfortable. All right. I didn't know that this was possible, but apparently it is. In Vietnam, a woman is having twins with two different fathers. Did you think that could be? I didn't think that could be.
Was she having a...
She was Randy.
That's her name?
Yeah,
with an
name is Randy. Yeah. Not a very common name in Vietnam, but this woman... is named Randy.
Was she having a double date, threesome kind of thing? Because it would have to be the same time.
The proximity, you would imagine, would have to be pretty close, right? Vietnam has identified an extremely rare case of what they call bipaternal twins. These are twins with different...
Bye, paternal twins.
No, not that kind of... B.I. B.I.
Oh.
A professor at a DNA testing lab in Hanoi told the AFP on Tuesday, that doctor has also been identified, by the way, as the fifth Beatle. A set of twins was born... See, again, I think they're just giving that honor to anybody at this point. That's wrong. A set of twins born to a Vietnamese couple whose names have not been released... were recently
pending identification of the father.
Right. Were recently taken for testing because of stark differences in the children's appearance. Now, I have twins who look extremely different, and I'm relatively sure I'm both the dads. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, wow, that could be a scandal.
Could be a scandal.
Yeah, fraternal twins are two separate eggs that come down and get fertilized.
Yes.
So they look...
You're going to look a little different, but I guess in these kids' cases, they look dramatically different. Our Center for Genetic Analysis and Technology Lab was tested and found a pair of biternal twins, said Lindy Long, producer
that
of
the... That is a fake name.
No, that's a real name. Mm-mm.
Yes, that is a fake name, like...
Nope.
Like when that Malaysian crash happened and the terrible prank that was played upon that reporter.
I remember I saw that.
I enjoyed it,
but it was wrong. this according to the Genetic Association of Vietnam. This is rare not only for Vietnam, but for the world, he said, but we all knew that. Why would it be more common in Vietnam? It's rare everywhere. Explaining that the two children had different fathers, but the same mother. Well, of course they had the same mother.
They shared a womb.
Right. A womb with a view. This can happen if two eggs from the same mother are fertilized by the sperm from two different men during separate acts of sexual intercourse within the same ovulation period.
Period. I get it.
Well, that's by mistake. According to the state-run Thuy Tri newspaper...
I'm sure that's how they say it.
I don't speak Vietnamese. I barely speak English.
Did you ever use that Thuy Tri oil?
I've tried. You know what? It's not bad.
It's an elixir for many things.
It's rich in emollients. The Vietnamese husband requested genetic testing at the Hanoi lab. This guy knew something was up, Wendy. This guy was not born yesterday. He knew something was up.
Oh, but his kid was.
Right. That kid looks just like me, but that kid doesn't look anything like me. Let's go get some tests done, he said. I'm paraphrasing.
Boy, that's embarrassing.
Wouldn't that be embarrassing?
Honey, I hope you're feeling okay, but got to go get some tests done.
Wouldn't that be embarrassing? The man's relatives pressured him to take the test because one of the babies looked strikingly different. One of the kids looked like Steve Grzanich from the newsroom. I'm not... Wendy, you know me. I don't point fingers, but that's odd.
You're pointing today.
Today I'm pointing, but normally I would not point. The results indicated that the man was related... Now, this is crazy. To only one of the babies.
This is like those stupid story problems that you lost me.
I don't understand
this. If
two
men could have two babies with only one mother...
This doesn't happen very often. Ruling out a hospital mix-up, his wife was found to be the biological mother of both children. Well, they didn't have to test for that. The baby came out of her. They saw that. That was
you are a genius.
I've been in the room a couple times when that's happened. According to...
What, do you need a towel? What happened to you?
I get so frustrated. Why does this keep happening? Why do twins keep having different dads? Come on, Obama.
It was a mid-story sigh. I don't know what happened to you.
I couldn't control myself. I'm frustrated with society. The twins were and are of the same sex. Why does it say they were of the same sex? They still are. They were born on the same day. They were born a few hours apart, but they look completely different. The report said the twins are now 2 years old, and one of them has thick, wavy hair, while the other one has thin, straight hair.
That could be a brother
and
sister.
That could be anybody.
I know. This is ridiculous.
That could be anybody. This is bogus.
He's got a bone to pick with the mother of the babies.
I think he does. Another rare case of bipaternal twins were reported in the United States last year when a court ruled that a man... was only required to pay child support for one girl in a set of twins after DNA tests proved that he was not the father of both. That's crazy.
Just keep it in your pants.
That's good advice, Wendy. Keep it in your pants. Now, do you know what I heard a couple of years ago, and I didn't know this was possible either, but since we're talking about it, what better time to bring this up? I thought that once you were pregnant, once you had a baby inside you, you could not get pregnant like for another baby.
But there was a woman like 2 or 3 years ago where this happened, and they said this is like a billion to one shot. But she was like 8 months pregnant, and then she started to then...
She ovulated? She obviously had to ovulate in order for that egg to get fertilized.
Yeah, you'd have to, right? But I thought that I didn't see any way that could happen, but that happened.
Because I could see you, a woman sometimes does tricks where she releases more than one egg.
What sort of trick is that? It's like for bar bets and stuff? Who would do something like that?
Sometimes more than one egg, breaks through the follicle and goes into the fallopian tube.
Right.
And they travel at different speeds.
I saw the overhead projector film.
I am seeing the cartoon and then the little cartoon sperm.
Sometimes the egg is dropped a little bit faster than the rest. That egg splits into two and they are called twins.
Those would be identical twins, but fraternal twins are when two eggs come down and they would travel at varying speeds, and sperm are not, all at the same speed. So I would imagine...
I'll say the world.
So
right. Thank you,
that's
Steve.
The only way I could see it happening is if this Randy girl had sex with two men at the same time within a few hours.
Right, a short span of time.
Then that's the only way that could happen.
That's
but
crazy.
I am no... scientist,
right.
Or what are they called? Fertilization expert?
Correct.
I just fertilize my lawn.
That's all you can do.
I'm too old to do anything else.
You know who's coming up? Steve Bertrand's got the Wintrust business launch. It's just moments away. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thanks, Kim. Hi, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy, and it's you, of course. 312-981-7200. If you'd like to join in, we'd love to talk to you.
I see Susie and Billy,
yep.
Listener Billy,
yep.
Nipsey.
I don't know that Nipsey is listening today. Nipsey.
I'm sure there's another Nipsey out there. I see Kevin, who looks older.
Kevin, as it turns out, our producer, Kevin Richter, is celebrating what I always consider to be the last... pain-free birthday.
It's just the last birthday. Everybody says this date from now on. This is how old you are.
He's 29 years old, and really, if you stop and think about it, that's the last birthday you can have where you don't start to realize that the sands of time are dripping quickly. Happy
Thanks,
birthday,
guys.
Kevin.
Can I tell you, the 30s was the best time of my life.
Oh, no doubt about
it. The best time. I got married. I had kids. Had a great job.
But without any doubt at all,
didn't have as many wrinkles.
But you know what I mean, where you start to look at the numbers and you start to go, uh-oh, now there's trouble.
I was thinner. I was prettier. I was actually nicer because I was thinner and prettier.
But I have to say, I mean, I'm 1 year into the 50s, but I'm liking the 50s. I'm kind of a free spirit, no kids. You can just kind of do whatever you want.
Kim,
they're all grown up.
You're only 1 year into your 50s?
Yeah.
You little baby.
Sorry.
There's great things about each of the decades.
There really are.
There really is. And yet, you realize, like, people always talk about middle age, and they go, oh, what are you, 51? You're approaching middle age. But... chances are, I hate to break the news to you, middle age really should be...
29, 40-something.
It maybe. Should be 40.
40, yeah.
40 is middle age, realistically, if you
Don't
look at life.
Think of it that way.
So you guys are, what would you call yourself?
Over the hill, shut up.
Yeah.
Okay. Happy birthday, Kevin, on
happy
that
birthday,
note.
Thank you.
I guess this was the wrong way to present a birthday to Kevin. But I was just, as Kevin was talking about being 29, I was thinking, he said, where were you guys at 29? And then Wendy started to cry, and I started to cry.
That wasn't my intention.
Where were you at 29?
I was doing stand-up. I was touring.
I was 6 years into my radio career.
Yeah.
At The Loop.
Do you still do radio? Are you still?
No.
You're out of the business totally?
Wasn't very good at it.
That's too bad. It's a lucrative field.
No, it is not.
You should reconsider.
Everybody thinks it is. That's what's so funny.
Yeah. There's millionaires in every direction.
I'm getting into my dirty, rusty car the other day, and Jim says to me, maybe we should get a new car because, if people recognize you and you get into your little crappy car.
It's going to look bad.
I don't care.
It doesn't matter. You're not doing it for the looks. Kim, what were you doing when you were Kevin's...
Okay, she's gone.
She's leaving. I don't blame her.
She refuses to answer.
I don't blame her. She took the right option.
But happy birthday, Kevin. I didn't mean I'm selling this improperly. 29 is a fantastic age, but it really is. It's the last time you can really have a good time.
I'm looking forward to my 30s. I'm happy where
You'll
I'm at.
You'll be fine.
Best time ever.
I part feel like a 12-year-old. I part feel like a you guys.
That was an insult.
It's so mean.
That was an insult.
No, I'm I just meant that like I
You started it. Bill started it in the office because you said, "Oh, it's a good thing you're getting married because no one would have you at 30."
But what Kevin essentially said, "I feel like a teenager, but I also feel like you guys, the cast of Willow," is what he said. Did you sense that at all?
You were off last week getting some medical tests done, which people still keep texting. He's going to make it, people.
I'm going to be all right.
And you don't exactly know what's going on just yet.
If you have me in your death pool, your Deadpool, you're not going to win. I'm fine.
No one has you. You're not popular, though.
Right, that's true. All right. I just want to be the new Abe Vigoda, where people just go, is that guy still alive?
But you were off that day, and we were talking about something in the office during the lunch break, and I cannot remember what it was, but I said something, and Kevin started to go, oh, yeah, my, and he stopped, and I said, what? And he goes, nothing. I said, no, what were you going to say? And he said, I was going to say my grandma does that.
Yeah.
It used to be like we're old enough to be your parents or older than your parents.
Yeah, what I was going to say, it had to do something with like being youthful and full of energy and looking wonderful every day.
You are so sweet.
For someone your age.
Right. That's what he didn't say.
See, that's where Bill
Steve.
And Bertrand come in. They finish it in a not nice way.
Yeah.
Congratulations for that quality you guys have.
Right. It's a rare
really
gift.
We both appreciate it, too.
You keep us on our toes, us old folk.
Yep. So true.
So it keeps you cute.
We're all the same age, pretty much, Steve and Bill and me. I think Bertrand's the oldest. Then me, then you.
You're always keeping score, aren't
yep,
you?
I am.
Well, for the younger part of your life, being older is that's you get points for that somehow. But then as you get older, being older is not the glamorous position that it once was.
No.
You know?
And the hair in your ears and your nose grows.
That's the weirdest thing too.
Not with women as much.
You're lucky.
I think of Abe Vigoda and look at the eyebrows lent itself to the ears and the nasal hair.
The eyebrows is the one. I don't think it'll ever get to Abe Vigoda territory, but remember like Andy Rooney at some point had a staff of people just working on his eyebrows? There were like three or four people that were like eyebrow tamers that just had to make sure his eyebrows wouldn't would consume him. All right, let's take a quick break.
And start the real show?
Yeah, the real show is starting in just a minute, I promise. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. How much flack do you think President Barack Obama will get for opting out of attending Nancy Reagan's funeral?
What does he care? He's finished with his job.
I think he still cares. I hope he still cares. He'll be the president until January.
Right.
So I would imagine he still cares, but it is one of those judgment calls. He's opted to attend. I don't know if it's up to him or if it's up to his schedule makers. But it says here, President Barack Obama will not attend Nancy Reagan's funeral. That comes up on Friday, keeping his originally scheduled appearance as keynote speaker at the South by Southwest Interactive Festival. Instead, the First Lady, Michelle Obama, who is scheduled to speak at the SXSW, that again is the South by Southwest Interactive
You're so
Festival.
Hip, Grant.
That's what I speak letters. She will, in his stead, she will be attending the funeral.
But she was supposed to speak as well, correct?
She was. So they figured out somebody in the family has to represent the family.
And it should be the First Lady representing the former First Lady. I think that's fine. He has a schedule going. And it's South by Southwest. He wants to rock.
Right. But if he says that in the press conference, it looks bad. If he makes a statement going, I want to rock. What can I do? I've been to funerals before. There's nothing I can do there.
Did you see his shape is fabulous? He had a physical from last year. He dropped 5 pounds.
Yeah.
And his blood, his cholesterol came down considerably.
Right.
But he's still doing the nicotine patch.
Oh, he is. Mm-hmm. Instead of smoking, do we know?
Or that's what, not, no that's what they're leading you to believe, because if you're doing the nicotine patch, but as a former smoker, you do the nicotine patch when you can't have a cigarette, like on an airplane or something
like
that.
Oh, right.
They always say, they talk about how the office ages you, that the office of presidency ages you dramatically. And you have to admit, if you've seen any pictures or clips of him from 7 or 8 years ago, there is a dramatic difference. But I would say that if you look at almost anybody in that age bracket, you're going to get more of it because you're the president and because of the pressures of the job. But very few people look exactly the same during that period of your life, right? I mean, it's 8 years. It's a long time.
It is a long time.
So the hair is going to be a little bit grayer.
That happened almost immediately.
The gray hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Usually you see that on a dad when they have a kid for the first time. All of a sudden the gray hair starts sprouting up, but his, like, almost overnight.
Yeah, that was pretty much the same. Now, Michelle, I have to say, Michelle Obama doesn't seem to be anywhere near older than she was 7 or 8 years ago.
No, she's more attractive. And
she looks great.
More spry. The arms are still great.
Yeah.
All clinical data indicates the president is currently very healthy and that he will remain so for the duration of his presidency.
Well, that doesn't say a lot. He's only going to be president until January. I'd want a bigger guarantee than that.
From Politico.com, the report put his weight at 175 pounds and his body mass index at 22.8. And if you look at him, he is a lean, mean fighting machine. He's on the slender side, in my opinion.
Have we had a president that's only weighed 175 pounds in our lifetime? That's pretty light.
He was 80. The National Institutes of Health puts a normal BMI between 18.5 to 24.9. He's at 22.8.
Oh.
That's off.
You think so?
I
Why?
Mean, look at him. He is in what I think is pretty decent shape, almost more on the slim side.
Right, right.
And he's like almost at the high end of the normal BMI range.
Is he still, he was playing basketball with some regularity. I don't know if that's still the case or not. But that'll, I mean, if you're playing basketball pretty regularly and eating right, he'll be in pretty good shape, you would think.
His visual, heart, skin, and neurological exams were all normal. He only drinks alcohol occasionally and in moderation. That's what I answer on the surveys,
too. He loves the Limeritas. he's got a 12-pack in the Oval Office. He pops it whenever.
Maybe
loves
he is going to be the new most interesting man.
Wouldn't that be something?
Dos Equis, get on that. He'll be free in January.
Dose terms.
He takes daily doses of vitamin D.
Yeah.
Sometimes takes acid reflux medication. And the report praised his healthy lifestyle choices. The report included one blemish that traces back to his prior vices.
Well, that's going to be smoking.
Obama still occasionally chews nicotine gum, but he's currently tobacco-free, according to the report.
Oh.
Although, if you're nicotine-free or tobacco-free, you don't usually do an occasional nicotine gum.
No? Is it more common than you have one on you at all times?
Once you get past the hump.
Yeah.
I know, just speaking from experience, you don't do anything nicotine.
By the way, that
nicotine
applies more to Bill Clinton than it does Barack Obama, but go ahead.
I'm healthy, too. I have a healthy sex drive.
Yes, he does.
Typically, when you finally get that giant monkey off your back, when you quit, you have to know never to ever have a social smoke again.
I would think.
And once you quit, I don't see the need to have an occasional Nicorette gum.
I
don't get that.
I've never smoked, and I've never had any inkling
monkey
to smoke.
On your back?
I've had monkeys on my back.
That's just for pleasure, though.
Sometimes after a show, I'll go home and Terry will throw a capuchin on my back, and I'll just walk around the house with it. I don't know why. It's just fun. But so what is that?
Like,
you just say to yourself, I just need a little bit of. Yeah, I don't know why every once in a while. He seems to me, because he's such a bright human being, not that people who smoke aren't bright
Here
human
comes.
Beings, but he seems above that. He seems like he could handle
it. It gets you hooked.
I know. I understand that. I know.
And he, you know, promised Michelle Obama that he would quit smoking when he got to the White House, and he did, but there was footage of him from a satellite that he was out by the garage, the White House garage, which oddly enough is the White Garage.
Yep.
And he was having a smoke out there.
Yep. How could you think if you're the president that somebody wasn't going to catch you?
If you are the president.
Again, I guess that would apply to Bill Clinton more than Barack Obama.
But that's why you do it in the White House. It's so big, you could do it in one room.
You could find a wing that's open.
Yeah,
and smoke
the smoking wing.
The smoking wing, right.
I mean, come on. on.
I guess so.
But that shocked me when I found out he was a smoker.
It just doesn't fit his profile. You
know? It does with the voice.
But you know how, and I've told you this before, I have this thing where if I talk to somebody for a little while, I can tell if they're a smoker, and not by their voice. It's just their demeanor. There's
You're not
the way
working
they,
for the carnival anymore?
I still, just to keep my insurance benefits going, I still do a couple of days a year. But can't you, when you meet somebody at a party or something,
I have
spend
no
a couple
idea.
Minutes? You,
Unless
really?
They smell like smoke, how would you know? Did you think Obama smoked?
No, but there's like a jitteriness. There's like a nervousness.
Yeah, you've said that before.
You don't sense that in people who smoke? You don't see that at all? Not even a little bit?
I see it in everybody.
Yeah? All right. Okay.
But he sure that's not just when people are around you, Bill?
No, it could be.
That could be it. Because I really would have never pegged him as a smoker ever in a million years.
No. He just seems like... I know this is a sweeping generalization, but I'll make it anyway.
Uh-oh.
The people who don't smoke just seem to be, for the most part, a little bit more in control of themselves overall.
That is just
you
a
don't,
stupid
you
statement.
You don't see that?
I don't know
at
how
all.
It could even be true.
Of all the people I've ever met, I've been wrong about such a small handful of people. You could just, there's like this weird nervousness to people who
could
smoke.
Could be anxiety.
Yeah. I guess.
Non-smokers have it too.
I guess. I don't know. I just put them, I bracket them together somehow.
You're an amazing human being.
Well, thank you.
And very worldly.
Thank you for realizing that. That took a while, but thank you. We have so much ahead on today's show. Guests aplenty. Something for everybody. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Well, I beg your pardon. Well, I never promised you a rose garden. Ran along with the
You know, roses are something. I never promised you a rose garden, Bill Left,
right.
But I'll give you one. When we first moved into our house 18 years ago, the people who lived there before had rose plants, and everyone said, oh, you got to cover them. You got to put these little styrofoam things on top of them for the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't because I didn't want them. And sure as could be, mm-hmm. come springtime, roses. I cannot kill roses, and they're supposed to be really tough to take care of.
Yeah.
Not for me. We're going to learn all about this at the Chicago Flower and Garden Show. In the studio with us right now, Tony Abruscato, director of the Chicago Flower and Garden Show. Hello, Tony.
Hello.
And you have brought a special guest, Alpana Singh. How are you, Alpana?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Now, where does the food and the flowers come together here?
You know, it's all part of lifestyle. So gardening and greening and lifestyle is there. And so we bring it all together. We have a garden gourmet stage where we have 30 chefs come in throughout the course. But Alpana's coming in because we have our charity benefit the night before we open to the public, which is this Friday.
The 11th, from 6 to 9:30 p.m. It benefits the Trotter Project. Tell us about the Trotter Project.
So the Trotter Project was started by a group of alumni or alumna. I never know the plural form of that. And so it was a way to commemorate the legacy of Charlie Trotter and his commitment to education and mentorship.
Mm-hmm.
And so the mission of the Trotter Project is to provide education, training, and mentoring opportunities to young culinary students.
And there are so many more now because of all these cooking shows, and chefs are now rock stars.
No, we were actually just talking about Graham Elliott in the green room. And so,
in a good way.
In a good way. Well, we're just talking about how, you know, little kids have his iconic glasses now.
Yeah.
And so, and he, of course, is a work for Charlie as well, is a proud alumni and member of the Trotter Project Foundation as
Excellent.
Well.
Excellent.
All right. Now that's the big kickoff, the Evening in Bloom preview event. That's March 11th from 6 to 9:30 p.m. It does benefit the Trotter Project, and you can get tickets ChicagoFlower.com?
ChicagoFlower.com.
All right. For some of us who maybe are not able to attend that sneak preview, what can we expect at this year's Chicago Flower and Garden Show?
You know, we've got a lot of new things at the show. We're really excited about part of our goal is to continue, like the Trotter Project, that's why we connected with them, is all about education and inspiration. And so we've got a brand new entrance garden at the show this year, Tom Kehoe from Kehoe Designs. Tom's one of the best event planners in the city, and he came in and he took over our entrance garden, and it's called Electric. And so Chicago is electric. And so we're going to have this amazing, never-before-seen style entrance garden. And then we brought in Brookfield Zoo, and they're doing huge topiaries, a 14-foot-tall wingspan butterfly.
Wow. Oh my god!
Nice.
Yeah, a 20-foot-long copperhead snake and a 12-foot-tall peacock. That's all topiary. It's all planted out. And so we've never had really anything like that at the show before. So we're adding that in. We're bringing in a group that is benefiting the Alzheimer's Association and creating not necessarily just awareness about Alzheimer's, but really talking about how gardening and outdoor lifestyles and activities create memories of a lifetime.
Sure.
And so it's a very positive spin to that messaging. And in addition to then those 20 different gardens, I won't go through every single one. We've got to keep a little suspense. But we've got,
quite honestly, we don't have the time.
Yeah, we don't have time. We run right into the next show.
Do 19 of them, Tony. Don't do all 20. That's crazy.
I mentioned the culinary stage, but our big thing that we're really focused on are kids' activity garden. So we have 9 free activities for the kids every single day at the show. They can create their own biodegradable. They can design and create their own biodegradable flower pot, plant herbs and veggies and take those home with them,
yeah.
Plus a bug zoo and a variety of other things. And then we have shopping and seminars and a lot going on. You can spend 3 to 5 hours there, no problem.
Absolutely. And, you know, my kids would not ever understand why mommy liked to garden so much. And now they're older and they understand that I like to bring my vodka and tonic out there when I'm gardening and watering. And I've seen neighbors walk by as I'm doing it. But now they're older and they're kind of interested in the vegetable garden. And it's fun in the summer. I had a decent year for tomatoes last year and the kids would be like, all right, let's go pick the harvest. It's pretty cool and pretty fun to go out to your yard, pick some tomatoes, some basil, go buy some fresh mozzarella and make your own caprese salad just from stuff you've grown in your yard.
Absolutely. And that's the one thing we tell about gardening too. It's a great family activity and the individual. I used to have a joke that, you know, 2 things money can't buy. It's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Oh my God. You're right.
And so having those tomatoes, I have a balcony in the city and I grow tomatoes and basil, and so I can do my own caprese salads for that same reason. And it's terrific. And we're finding that millennials are getting into gardening, but as you said, it's edibles. They're going in on the food and veggies. So we'll have, right now, we just got a delivery today of 2,500 vegetable plants and herb plants so that the kids can take those home and pot them up with them for free.
That's so cute.
And Alpen, as somebody who appreciates food the way you do, the taste of fresh food as opposed to something that's been around a while is amazing.
No, it's
isn't
no
it?
Comparison.
Yeah.
I mean, it's. I was in Portugal and visiting this winery vineyard, and they took us to the secret garden, and they, you know, took us this tomato patch, and the tomato. I mean, I've never had a tomato like that. I mean, really understand why it is a fruit.
Why was that secret? What was going on there that would constitute that being
a secret tomato garden?
Yeah, what exactly is behind the secret part of that?
Well, it was sort of like Hansel and Gretel, you know, in this briar patch.
She'd have to kill you.
I don't want you. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. You were talking about topiary. Realistically, because I love seeing it, but realistically, can the average person with basic gardening skills pull off topiary?
It's like Edward Scissorhands.
That's who you need. You need him working for you. But to sculpt
I wouldn't mind that.
That'd be all right.
Come over here.
Well, you can do 2 things. One of is to sculpt a plant.
Yeah.
The other is what they did is they actually worked with, I believe it's Topiary Joe out of Disney World. And so they created these metal frames that have little pockets. And so all the flower pots are going into the individual pockets. So that you could definitely do and create those. I'm assuming that those are going to be out at Brookfield Zoo in the summer. If they were smart, they'd put those back out on the grounds. But the topiaries are great. One, you can just buy some. And that's the other thing we tell people is we try to do all the education and DIY, but we also have a slew of people that you can buy from things from at the show. And so from the topiary standpoint, you know, it's kind of a great way. You can practice, you can try it. If it doesn't work, you know, try it again. It's not a big deal, but it's just, you know, how extensive do you want to get in going through this? It's like, do you want to cook all this food at home or do you want to go to one of Alpina's restaurants?
Right.
You know,
that's true.
And how many do you have now, Alpina?
2.5. We're opening a third in Evanston soon, so...
And name your restaurants. Alpen is singing in the studio.
The Boarding House. And then we have Seven Lions.
Is that the one with the good burger that you've bragged about?
Seven Lions right across the street from the Yard Institute. Mm. And then we're opening Terra and Vine in Evanston later this summer. And all three have beautiful patios, by the way.
Oh, nice.
Yes. And so we take great pride in. And it's nice. You know, I live in a high rise. I don't have access to a balcony. And so my outdoor dining is at restaurants. And I really appreciate that extra effort that restaurateurs take to beautify their patios. Sure. And, you know, it's a luxury. And everybody knows in the summertime, everybody goes crazy and Chicago's want to be outside. And I really appreciate those restaurants that really take that extra effort to make a beautiful patio.
We always give a restaurant an extra star or two if they have outdoor dining. It's just a better experience in the summer.
Especially if the flowers are beautiful, right? Too. Yeah. And of course, edible gardens for a lot of restaurants now that feature like herbs or things, you know, something that
that's what I was going to ask you. A lot of restaurants are growing maybe their own tomatoes and stuff. Is that true?
Well, yeah. So you can have like a rooftop garden. You can also do, you know, fresh herbs, certainly, or you can do it, you know, even inside the restaurant hydroponically. Mm-hmm. So people can get very creative, you know, just offering that, you know, just that extra touch.
Yep.
All right. Well, it sounds like a great time. Chicago Flower Show, excuse me, ChicagoFlower.com, correct?
ChicagoFlower.com.
Okay.
Yes.
That's where you can get all the information. Tony Abruscato, director of the Chicago Flower and Garden Show. Alpana Singh, active supporter of the Trotter Project. And if you'd like to find out about the preview event, this is brought to you by Mariano's, yes. March 11th. That's this Friday from 6 to 9:30 p.m. Benefits the Trotter Project. Again, you can go to ChicagoFlower.com. So if you go in there and you need some ideas, maybe you do have some open holes in your garden where the perennials from last year did not come back up. Are there ideas and different variations of plants and how they work well together so we can decide what we want to do in our home gardens?
Absolutely. And one of the nice things about it is that, again, those 20 different gardens that we have representations of all of that. But there's also industry professionals in each one of those gardens. So you can talk to them about it. And then we are actually the very first show in the world. I get to say that maybe this year, next year, maybe not the same. But the very first show in the world, we have collaborated with an app called Grow It. And it came from Chicago, growit.com, and it's one of these apps. And they are actually pre-feeding in all of the flowers that are at the show. And so when you're walking around, if you download the Grow It app, you can actually find out all the information about the particular flower that you like at the show, from what zone it works well in, how much water, is it sun, is it shade. And so we're all about three things: inspire, educate, and motivate. So there's this huge focus on education so people can walk around the show. It's just not something pretty to look at.
You don't know how many times I walk around my neighborhood taking pictures of flowers or bushes that
and
I think are beautiful.
And windows with drapes that are open.
Up.
You can tell them the whole story.
And then I kind of stalk that house and wait for the person to come out. If I can't identify it, like I'll punch into Google, okay, you know, variegated color on the leaf and red berries. If I can't find it, I will literally stalk that house while walking the dog, hoping they'll come out and go, oh, excuse me, your garden's so pretty. What kind is that? 9 out of 10 times, they don't even remember.
Right.
So this app is awesome.
So you can go to the app, you take a picture of it, you upload it up and kind of like, what is this? And you get a response back and tells you
How does that happen? Is there somebody at some sort of a building?
Botanists.
Is that what
flower
it is?
Magic.
24-hour botanists? Or they I've never heard of that. That's great.
Yeah, it's part of this, and it's a whole community of people. So it's people responding to each other. People can rate a flower. So, oh, I've planted this hydrangea and it's worked really well. And somebody will come back, oh, I planted it, it didn't work. So you can like it or not like it, a particular plant. And so it's really something new that we're adding into the show this year that's going to be
That's a good great. Idea.
Because people are always like, what is that and how well will it work in my own garden?
Right. You paid Wendy the biggest compliment, Tony, that I've ever heard. You were telling Alpana when you guys walked in that last year when you visited us, Wendy actually knew more about this stuff in some cases.
That was not for air.
This is not for air. This is just between us in the room. But she knew more than you knew about some of that. Huh? That was great.
You know what? I started out, I was in the banking business and I went into the event business and I produced a lot of charity events in the city of Chicago. And I got turned on to the Flower and Garden Show, and I thought it was such...
From green to green.
And the first green was a little more stable than the second green. You know, this show dates back to 1847. It's really a city of Chicago legacy, and I got turned down by it, and so I purchased it 5 years ago to do it. But I'm not a master gardener. I'm not a botanist. I don't know. I'm learning more and more about all these things. But that's why when I look at the Flower and Garden Show, I kind of look at it through my eyes. So it's not going through some master gardener, though I love the master gardeners and they help us a lot at the show, but we're not looking all the time through their eyes. We're looking at through the general public that says, I really don't know what to do. And right. so that's kind of the basis of the show. And then there's certainly things there for a better educated gardener. But yeah, that's why I always tell people, they said though, now after 5 or 10 years of doing the show, I can no longer say I'm not in the industry.
You're in the industry.
I'm in the industry right. now. But that's the thing. There's a ton of people out there that have so much knowledge about the show and about the flowers that it's amazing. So yeah. Wendy's going to do, since we're calling everybody out, Wendy's going to do a vignette for us next year.
Ask at me. The flower I'll be there show. In a minute. Steve Bertrand also likes to garden.
Yeah, he's
and
a
it's
big
one
gardener.
Of those things where even though you don't know what to put where, you just take the colors that you like and the shape of a flower that you like, and you experiment. Your yard becomes your canvas. It's just so fun.
People always ask me, what should I grow? And I always tell them, what do you like? Like, my favorite color is orange. So when I buy flowers, I buy orange flowers. And when I grow flowers, I grow orange flowers. And it's like, just try it. See what you like. I like caprese salad, so I grow basil and tomatoes. I like mojitos. I grow mint and rosemary for rosemary potatoes. And so people always think there's this right and wrong answer. Now, there's sometimes, there's shade versus sun. You know, there's some
right.
basic things there. But basically, just do what you like and experiment. I mean, that's what it's about. Have fun with it.
So if somebody's listening right now and wants to go to the Chicago Flower and Garden Show, it kicks off to the public on Saturday.
Saturday, March 12th.
Through the 20th, Navy Pier is where I guess we didn't say where it was. It's at Navy Pier. And how do people get tickets and get there?
So they can go to chicagoflower.com. And if they buy tickets before opening day online, they get an additional $2. They get $2 off the box office price. So they can save some money by buying tickets in advance. And then the nice thing about it is there's Navy Pier discounted parking. There's also remote parking around Navy Pier that's discounted. Mm-hmm. And then on our website, if you go into our visit area, it'll give you all the, what bus to take and public transportation. There's also a free trolley that runs from the local garages on the weekends.
I'm there this year, 100%. And next year, for sure, I'll put together my little
vignette.
I would like to do a vignette.
Wendy's written a little play about flowers that yes, she's going to perform for everybody.
All right,
it's not for kids, by the way. Don't bring the kids.
Also, sign up for the Chicago Flower and Garden Show's e-newsletter and weekly blog at chicagoflower.com. That's where you can find all the info. Thank you so much and have lots of fun.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Chicago Flower and Garden Show coming soon to Navy Pier. How soon? This Saturday, the 12th through the 20th. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. All right, whoever wants to go to the Chicago Flower and Garden Show, we were unaware of this when we were talking to Tony Abrascato, the director of the Chicago Flower and Garden Show, and Alpana Singh, who has a bunch of restaurants, including Seven Lions, which allegedly has the best burger. That's what she says.
Well, you don't believe her? I've heard good things.
We'd have to taste it
you
to find
try
out.
It first? All right.
But you know what they did give us is a family four-pack of tickets to go to the Chicago Flower and Garden Show running through from the 12th to the 20th at Navy Pier. So how do you want to do it?
If you call right now at 312-981-7200 and your caller in honor of Kevin's 29th birthday.
Oh, you're making him work hard on his birthday.
No, I was just going to say in honor of his birthday and he's 29, he's getting old. Caller number 6 because I don't want him to pass out. 312-981-7200. Be caller number 6. You will win that family four-pack to the Garden Show, the Chicago Garden Show.
I am going this year. I really want to go.
Have you not gone in the past? This
no.
is right. This is perfect for you. They made this for you.
Weekends are just busy usually.
Yeah.
And my son Michael's going to Ireland
right.
with his school choir, and I've never had him away from me or in another country for
right.
this long.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be looking for things to do so I don't cry.
Well, go to this then.
When
You're
does
set.
He leave?
He is arriving in Dublin, the redheaded Michael Mack, on St. Patrick's Day at 5 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
It will never be the same.
He'll stand out.
You're going to come home with, he's going to come home a different man.
Yep.
I'm okay with some of the attributes if he'd come home differently, but some of them I don't
Do you want to list what you're looking forward to or what you're dreading?
He's, a 16-year-old forgetful teenager, and
right.
I would like him to take care of himself more so I don't have to worry about him. And
did you staple gun his passport to his forehead or something? I heard some story that you were afraid.
No, but can I share a good tip that I did tell you off
sure.
the air? And Steve, I know you have the Steve Bertrand travel, and I really should have asked you, but I was worried if he loses his passport.
Yeah.
So we had to go to the Ireland meeting at the high school, and some mom suggested taking a scanner or taking an iPhone picture of the passport and the kid's birth certificate and save it into your drive, your Google Drive or whatever, mm-hmm. in case of an emergency, if mom at home has to go get him another passport because he's misplaced it. Or someone said one time they were able to use that as a document to get them out of the country.
Just the picture of the passport?
Yes.
Really? Wow.
Well, I hope that was a long, long time ago.
I don't know that it wouldn't happen now. Right. But still, if he would have to go to the U.S. consulate office there and I was able to provide him with the documentation, I wonder if that, you know.
They deal with thousands and thousands of forgetful high school students going to Ireland every year.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure they've been through it.
Mm-hmm. It'll be nervous wreck. Nothing to worry about.
Nothing at all.
Come on.
And then I'm reading the itinerary. I mean, they land at 5 a.m. and they're going right to the St. Patrick's Day parade. They are spending a lot of time on a bus going from hotel to hotel and singing at various locations. And then I'm reading, and you're going to kiss the Blarney Stone. And I start crying and I'm like, please make sure someone takes a picture of you kissing the Blarney Stone.
I don't think that's emotional at all. I think you're fine.
He's my first one.
to leave the country?
Well, he's my first kid, so this is all new to me. You weren't like this when your girls went to college?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, you're fine.
It's 10 days.
I know, but they've had kids come in and out before. It'll be all right.
Not my kids.
You'll see. It'll be all right. All right. Do we have a winner yet, Kevin? We don't know who that winner is.
Her name is Meg, and I don't remember where she was calling from, but she won a family four-pack to the Chicago Flower and Garden Show.
All right, Meg will be attending the Flower and Garden Show. Congrats, Meg. A quick break. News is next.
While Wendy will be watering the flowers.
With her tears.
All right. Excuse me, but the tables were turned a little while ago when your kids were going away. I felt for you. I said I'd even try and hug you more at work. Why do you give me such grief?
It's just Bill. 10 days. He's coming back. It's just a short trip.
A lot could happen. He's in another country.
I know. It'll probably be okay.
Such a foreign country, too.
Right. You hear these stories about Ireland. Who knows? He could bring back soap.
Seriously, you both admitted to crying when, you know, Steve, you took your daughter first to school. You were crying.
What?
Oh, you know how quickly you all forget.
I don't remember. Did I say that?
I don't know.
You didn't say that, Steve?
No, of course I did.
I was very emotional. I mean,
Wendy, I'll be crying in spirit for you.
Kevin, you've got Kevin on your side.
You know, we're just giving you a hard time. Right. He's going to have a wonderful time, and if he loses his passport, it'll be extended a little bit.
Yeah. I'll call Steve Bertrand Travel and have him arrange things.
We'll my wife's got cousins in Dublin. We'll put them up.
Really?
Problem solved. Sure. Problem solved.
Maybe I'll go with and stay with the cousins, and then I can spy on them.
Maybe. All right. A break. Some news. More show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right. You recognize that sound, I believe, don't
that
you?
That is the prettiest sound anywhere on the planet. That is the sound of two people playing the game of table tennis.
Okay.
Or ping pong.
And what's a pip again?
Well, a pip is on a paddle, on a ping pong paddle. Those are the dots you see on the paddle. That's
the little nibs, as people who don't play ping pong call them.
You could call them nibs, but they're pips. You know.
Good to know.
I'm almost embarrassed, but yeah, you could. Let's talk about a new place opening up in town. That place is called Spin. Arman Razavi joins us right now to talk about it. He is the general manager of Spin. First of all, you and I know each other. We have stood across a table tennis table from each other.
Yes, I had the pleasure of playing against you.
Bill's so good, isn't he?
You are a very good table tennis player, sir.
No, you are. No, you beat me so a few times. If you go I'm by a little bit embarrassed.
If you go by score, yes, I beat you. But if you just go by sheer ability, you're our winner.
I played ping pong as a kid. Some of the rich people in the neighborhood would have the ping pong table, actually in their garage. And I have noticed ping pong tables popping up all over the place.
It's an upswing. Everybody's playing it these days. And I think as a concept, we're pushing the concept forward as well, too.
Love it.
But everybody has that childhood memory of playing ping pong against their cousins and their neighbors, so on and so forth, whether it was in their basement or in a garage. So it sort of takes you back to that moment for me as well, too.
Sure. Did anyone of your cousins play as seriously as Bill Left does, though, when you're playing ping pong against
My
him?
My cousin is actually in New York, is a champion in his own right.
Oh.
So he goes out and plays. And when I was telling him that we're going to open up a spin in Chicago, he's like, I go there all the time. Actually, I won a championship over there.
Really?
Very cool.
Well, spin already exists on the coasts. You have them in New York. You have them in Los Angeles, around California. But is this the first Midwestern spin?
This is the first
one. It is.
Chicago is the one that we built from ground up. And then San Francisco is going to open up a month and a half from now.
Wow. There is a celebrity behind spin. Tell that story. It's Susan Sarandon, right?
Susan Sarandon, yes. Yeah. She's one of our founders. She was there from the beginning. It started with two of our co-founders that started the game of ping pong, playing out of lofts in Tribeca. And one of those events, one of those parties, Susan Sarandon showed up. She loved the concept, and they decided to take it to the next level.
How fun is it, though, to have a place where you can have a few cocktails and play ping pong?
Absolutely. I think it just lends itself. You can play it passively or actively. You can play with a drink in your hand.
Sure.
Or that's how I like to
you
play.
You can train for Olympics if you really want to.
That's how
we
Bill
have
likes
people
to
train
play.
For Olympics out of our space in New York, and probably will have that out of Chicago as well, too.
The staff made fun of me because I've been there a couple times, and I bring my own paddles. I have a couple paddles that I bring, and everybody laughed because they've got quite an array of top-notch paddles
and
there.
And yours are kind of beat up. We kind of laughed at you, too.
Well, one or two of them are beat up. They're weathered. They know where the table is.
They have character.
They have character is the right
oh,
way to say it.
Oh, that's what it is. By the way, Kevin, did you see how defensive he got when I said yours are a little worn out? A little.
They're, they've been through the battlegrounds a little bit.
Can't part with them. Emotional. All the wins on those pips.
I know what their abilities are. I know what my paddle can do and what it can't do.
Absolutely. You got to get used to the paddle. So the paddle itself is the blade itself is really important, and the construction of it is really important.
Right.
We were talking about the pips as well, too. The rubber that goes on top of it. Those are all important. So if you have a paddle that you're comfortable with and that's what that's your game sort of, is adjusted to that paddle, that it's important to always have that paddle with
mine
you.
Came from a tree. You've seen The Natural, right? It's the same story with with Redford's baseball bat. That's how my ping pong paddle is. Now, let's talk about the word, because we say ping pong, but purists to the game get very upset. They only want it to be called table tennis, never ping pong.
We're going with the more traditional approach to the name. We're going with ping pong.
Yeah,
I think that table tennis has morphed into something, and we're being originalist with this.
Why not? So, yeah. It sounds more fun.
Did you ever play Gnip Gnop when you were little, which was a little game that was ping pong spelled backwards?
Yes, it
and
was.
It wasn't really as much fun as playing ping pong.
No,
I never did, actually. So
you probably never heard of it. All right, I want to know if there's a certain poster of Bill Left that's going to be up at Spin that says, do not let this guy hustle you. Do not just, we're here to play for
fun.
He's
very unassuming, isn't he?
Well, I know the game. I come in and I go, now explain to me how this game works. And then people do. And then all of a
hustler.
Sudden I go, just for fun, let's play $50 a point just to see what happens.
That's it.
They're going to remake The Sting based on ping pong.
All right.
So now, when does Spin open to the public? The Ping Pong Social Club 344 North State Street.
Correct.
When does it open to the public?
Well, our grand opening is tomorrow. At 9:30, we're open to the public. We have a couple of private parties before then. And then everybody can join us.
And you guys have gone out of your way. I know that the food is supposed to be spectacular. I've heard good things about the food. And there are drink specials. Go through some of the food that you can get there, Armand.
Sure.
What do you have?
Our chef, Ariel Bagadiong. It came from Dana Hotel and W, and he's put a marvelous menu together. Again, we talk about the concept being very communal.
Yeah.
And as far as the space is concerned, as far as the food and beverage cocktail, food and beverage as well, the menu is very communal, meant to be shareable. So they're sort of, we talk about approachable, craveable, shareable. That's the approach we have taken. So it's a twist on American fare. We have anything from flatbreads and to sliders to charcuterie dishes and cheeses.
But kind of things you can pick on, because if you're playing table tennis or ping pong,
you don't
want to sit down there with a
dessert. design as well. Burger. And on the beverage side, Benjamin Newby has put a fantastic menu for us. We bottle our own cocktails. And we have large format and single serving as well, too. It's meant to be for high volume. We're a large space, 16,000 square feet, two floors. So we have to keep that in mind as well, too. But we understand we're in Chicago. It's a cocktail-centric kind of a city. It's a foodie city. Yeah. So we have put our best foot forward, and we're hoping that people will really appreciate that.
It sounds like such a fun night out and something different to do, like maybe a great girls' night out.
Absolutely. Any kind of grouping. And it's also for exercises, for team building exercises is fantastic. We get a lot of corporate groups that come through there and,
to, like,
and
rent
out the space.
Out.
Absolutely. It's a good icebreaker.
When's your birthday, Bill? November?
In November. Hmm. That might be a good birthday place.
Absolutely. I think that's the place.
Now, aside from doing what you just said and renting the whole place out, you can get a table and you buy it either by the half hour or by the hour, right?
Sure. Is that so how it's we have done? Divided into peak or off peak. So 5 to 10 p.m. is considered a peak hour.
Sure, right.
You get a $39 an hour or $29 for half an hour. Mm-hmm. Or off-peak, you can get it for $25 an hour or $15.
Oh, that's not bad at all. And you're splitting that with two, three, four, five people.
Absolutely.
It's nothing at all.
Yes.
It's Spin. I love that name. And is that because you put spin on the ball?
Yes,
when
the backspin, the topspin, and actually our cocktail menu is designed as well too. So backspin refers to, you know, your tongue, whether you're sensing the bitter taste on the back of your tongue. So we call that section backspin. We have a topspin.
Is that cute?
Yeah.
I hit the ball. I couldn't tell you if I spun it
that
or
doesn't
whatever.
Matter. You just got to get it on the table.
Bill's
That's
got
all.
A good cut.
We play when Armand and I play. It was crazy spin.
You are going to be no fun to go to spin with.
We defy the laws of physics, and Armand made fun of me because yes, I wear a helmet when I play. I don't want to get hurt, so he was ripping on me for that. But that's fine.
Tomorrow's the day, people. 344 North State Street. WeAreSpin.com is the website.
Yes, we.
And I believe we have something to give away.
Absolutely, we have an hour of court time. That we can give away if they can answer the question.
Now, this is a tough... I'm going to warn you, this is a fairly tough question, but somebody's going to get it. Do you want to ask the question, Armand? Do you have
the
question?
I didn't bring my glasses with me, actually.
Hold on.
I can ask it. I have it.
Yeah?
Unless you want. Do you want to borrow some glasses? Bill gets his at Walgreens.
Yes,
he can give you one.
Top quality.
I should, too.
Top quality.
All right. Now, are we going to take the first caller with the right answer? Because I don't trust people now that the internet's out.
Well, this is a question where the answer is Googleable, but more than one person could Google it. So either way, you go ahead. You decide.
You decide the number. I'll read the question.
Caller number four.
Caller number four who answers this correctly at 312-981-7200. What year did table tennis, also known as ping pong, that's how we affectionately refer
sure.
to it. What year did table tennis debut at the Summer Olympic Games?
Now, a lot of people will be shocked to learn that this is an Olympic event, but if you see
these... I am shocked right now.
Yes.
Trust me when I tell you, when you see these Olympic-quality players playing table tennis or ping pong, you can't believe the speed and the accuracy and the spin. It's a sight to behold.
And we have a lot of pros working out of our space as well, too. So
yeah.
During the day, they coach. We always talk about the skill level really doesn't matter to come to as far as coming to spin.
Yeah.
If you're somebody just starting out, you can take three lessons and you already be 50% better than where you were before.
Sure.
So it's really simple to grasp and get better at it.
But now, do you have to take lessons or can you
no.
just go
no.
there and like no. have fun? And if you suck, you
Absolutely.
Suck.
Absolutely, yeah. absolutely.
You're just
you can
have
fun with your friends if you want to have a group of ladies come out. And they want to have fun and just talk and play a game and have a cocktail. Absolutely.
That would be so very fun. All right, we're still working on this fourth caller with the correct answer. What year did table tennis debut at the Summer Olympic Games?
All right, a quick break. We will find a winner. Somebody's going to spin. It could be you. 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder, and our guest is Armand Razavi. He is the general manager of a new club that's opening here in town, Spin. Not your average club. Yes, there's drinks, and yes, there's food, and yes, they're fantastic, but there's also plenty of table tennis to be played. How many tables, Armand?
We have 18 on the floor right now, but we can expand to 20.
Excellent.
And we asked a trivia question. What year did table tennis, ping pong as we know it, debut at the Summer Olympic Games? If you were the fourth caller at 312-981-7200 and you knew the answer to that, you would win a little fabulous hour of ping pong. Melanie, you think you have the answer?
I do.
What's the year?
1988.
Armand says yes.
Yep, absolutely.
You're a winner, Melanie. Winner.
Great. This is the year my daughter was born, and I remember it well. So.
Table tennis has been in the Summer Olympic Games since 1988, as Melanie said, with singles and doubles events for men and women. That comes as a surprise to me. I never
Don't let
knew
it shock
it.
You. These guys are amazing. You can't believe how good they are. Melanie, congrats.
Thank you so much, you guys. Have a good afternoon.
All right, stay on the line. We'll get all your information. When guys are playing, when Olympic quality guys are playing table tennis or ping pong, how fast is the ball going back and forth? Can you measure how many miles per hour?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't think I know it from the top of my head, but it's pretty fast.
Oh, it's very
fast. It's hard to keep track of it. And also, they stand so far behind the tables.
Right.
And hence, you need such a large venue because you need about 15 feet on either side of
right.
the table. But it's so much fun to watch them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's not a dangerous sport for moms and dads out there who are worried about their kids playing high school
Absolutely
football and getting concussions.
Not. Actually, we do a lot of events for kids as well, too. And that's really important to Susan and it's important to us. So
yeah.
we do during the day, we can do birthday parties and have the kids out, the parents,
oh, see, that's
and have
fun
them
too.
Play, even take some lessons.
Yeah.
We have a lot of fun with that.
Oh, yeah,
and you know, when
like
kids
it.
Get older, you don't they're too old to take to Chuck E. Cheese or something. So that's a really great idea for birthday parties.
Yeah. We also donate our tables once a year with our through our partnership with Stiga. So a lot of disadvantaged schools and children, we try to put as many pedals in their hands as possible. They're the future,
yeah.
and we try to build them from the, from the young age to love the sport
right.
as well too. So
oh,
that's something
nice.
That Spin does as well.
I've seen footage of kids in other countries, in poorer countries, that want to play the game so badly. So they'll craft a paddle like out of a block of wood. They'll just hold a block of wood or a book or something, and that becomes their ping pong paddle.
Well, if you come to Spain, you're going to see some of our pros playing with their iPhones, and they have these little paddles. I think at that point they're just showing off. But yeah,
yeah. On vacation, I saw a guy playing with his flip flop.
He was.
Yeah,
How about
and
that?
He was doing pretty well. I mean, if you're a good player, you really could. Improvise.
The other day they were playing with spatulas, which I thought that was just a step too far.
When my dad taught my brother and I to play, because he was much better than us, he would play with a record album or just whatever was handy
right.
and still beat us. And then eventually
yes.
we destroyed him.
WeAreSpin.com. Go find out all the information. Was Susan Sarandon a big ping pong player?
She still is.
She loves the sport.
Really?
Absolutely.
I never would have pegged her as that.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. Great to see you, Armand. Spin
Thank
is going to be
Bill.
A huge hit for you. We know it, so we're
tomorrow,
thrilled that you
starting
guys are
tomorrow
here.
At 9:30 at night, right?
Yes.
Grand opening.
Yes.
Go.
Grand opening party.
Thanks for stopping by. Great
Thank
to
you
see
for
you.
Having me.
A quick break. News is next, and then more show coming your way. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
One, two, three. Is it Prince Spaghetti Day?
Wendy, as you know, every Wednesday is Prince Spaghetti Day, yes.
I thought it was Thursday.
No. You're always confused in the middle of the week for some reason as to what day it is. This is a trend I've noticed.
I'm a little excited. I'm going to see The Who tomorrow night.
And you've never seen them before.
No. I've interviewed Pete Townsend before.
Yeah.
Is this their farewell tour?
No, but it's funny because when I interviewed Pete Townsend, this was just when the Eagles got back together. I know
yeah.
he wasn't in the Eagles. Let me finish my story, Steve.
All right.
The Eagles had just gotten together for When Hell Freezes Over, and I asked Pete, do you see The Who ever getting back together? And he's like, never. Never in a million years. Over my broken guitar.
Did he say over my broken guitar?
No, but he said no. He never saw that happening. And like Cher with her, how many farewell tours has she had?
Oh, she started when I was in grade school.
I saw their farewell tour in 80.
The Who?
82 or 83, yeah. I did, in Milwaukee.
Awesome. I cannot wait. I am geeking out.
I think you're going to have a good time. I really do. Here's a strange story. The other night, I'm watching what I consider to be one of the best shows on television. That's Last Week Tonight. It's on HBO. John Oliver is the host. It's known right now most notably for his skewering of Donald Trump, not on last week's episode, but 2 weeks ago.
Which we talked about. That was the only time I had really seen an episode.
It got a lot of attention. I mean, all over the internet, you could, you know, there were links to find the little segment that he did about Donald Trump. But he does this on a weekly basis, is he takes a couple of topics and he just kind of dissects them. And of course, he makes fun of them. And it's well written. And John Oliver does a great job. So on last week's episode, that's the one that started on Sunday, they were talking about committees. And you say to yourself, well, what could you possibly talk about committees? But he was talking about how here in the United States, every state has all these various committees all over the place. And what they do is they use up space and they use up money and they're mostly not necessary, but there's no way to dissolve these committees. So then all of a sudden he's talking about a town here in Chicagoland area that is a little committee heavy. They've got four separate committees all having to do with mosquito abatement. And he goes, you know, most towns would probably use one or maybe two, but this town has four. And then to illustrate his point, he shows our friend Ravi Baishwal from Channel 7, who's on the line with us right now. Ravi, how are you?
I just cleared my phone of all the emails and incredible number of retweets and stuff like that after having been mentioned like that. It was, you know, the irony in the whole, well, there's lots of irony in all this, but the funniest part was I was actually on the air when on our own show when this actually happened. So in a commercial break, I check my phone and it's literally blowing up. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, what is going on? What is going on? And people know not to phone me during my own show, and then this happens. I guess I showed up on John Oliver's show.
How about that? That's a sure sign of success, sir. That's not bad.
So now I'm confused.
It is.
I didn't see it. So did he mention you by name? Did he play footage of you talking about this? Are you a fan of his show, and had you watched it regularly?
I am a fan. I can't say I watch it regularly.
Well, you're working.
I'm working at that time, but... But I certainly know that people watch it a lot. And so what happened was, it really wasn't about me, honestly. It was just the fact that on that on a given day, and I still have been looking for the actual show where we did the story about how the mosquito abatement district, and I think it was Elwood Park, I'll have to check that again, had actually, as it turns out, the person who was the head of it, who also I think happened to be the mayor of one of the local towns thereabouts, actually caught West Nile virus. So it's in the mosquito abatement district where the head of it has actually caught West Nile virus. And I guess John Oliver was pointing that kind of funny circumstance, that ironic turn of events.
It certainly is.
And I am introducing that story in just a voiceover as part of a broader newscast. And I'm just making mention of what the story is. So it actually had nothing to do with me. It was just about what the story was that I was showing. And the way it comes off is that, you know, this special district is so silly that its own head of mosquito abatement goes and gets West Nile virus. So it catches, I think the humor is obvious there. So I thankfully, you know, it's so funny. My cousin in Toronto, in Canada, immediately texted me and he said, "Hey, dude, you're on John Oliver right now." It's like, "No, I'm not. I'm on my own show. Leave me alone." And he goes, "No, don't worry. He wasn't mocking you. He was just mocking the story that that you were just talking about, and it fit into his broader narrative." So, you know, I'm not the first news anchor to be involved in such a way, and I certainly won't be the last. But it is amazing the kind of reach shows like that really do have.
Well, the timing on it is perfect. As Wendy and I were saying, it comes 1 week after his Trump piece, which got more attention than anything they had done in the two seasons the show have been on. So everybody knows a lot of people were watching Sunday night, and there's been a rerun or two of it since. So you got a lot of play there, Ravi. I mean, you're in good shape there.
You know, and honestly, I think I'm on it for about 10 seconds.
Yeah.
10 to 12 seconds. And it is, and it's, you know, there's
the best 10 to 12 seconds of your life recently, Ravi.
That's true. That's all it is, right? I mean, that's 10 to 15 seconds of my 15 minutes, I suppose. But it is interesting because then another friend of mine in New York who tapes the show, mm-hmm. he he sent me this very, very, you know, elaborate text message yesterday with the whole kind of video and embedded into it and everything like that. And he's like, hey, you never understand what happened. You won't believe it because he taped the show and he didn't watch it until, I don't know, yesterday afternoon. He's independently wealthy, so he can golf in the middle of the afternoon. And so while he's having a beer at the turn of nine, he just looks it over and goes, hey, there you are. I was like, yeah, I've heard enough.
Well, I always wondered in a case like that, if they need to clear it with you or with ABC7 or WLS, I always wonder if they need permission, but it's you're considered part of the landscape, right? Part of the news.
Yeah. I think it's just, it's all part of what the environment is out there. It's fair comment. It's fair game. And we're just out there and no one's asking WLS or ABC News or the Disney Corporation for that matter for any permission on any of this. I can tell you that if we wanted to use a clip from another station, there would be a lot of hoops to jump over and we would do it that way. But you know what? I suppose they just think, well, this is a small little local city and a local newscast in that city, and we're the big New York network thing here. And the fact that way more people watch our show than watch their show when you're actually looking at the eyeballs has nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's another one of those New York Chicago things.
Ravi Baiswal, you can see him ABC 7 Weekend News at 5 and 10, and you report for all ABC 7's newscasts. What's next for you? An episode of Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, Chicago Broadcasters. What's next for you, Ravi?
You never know what'll happen. The news will come to us. The Chicago Fire and all those fire and police stories are all on NBC, so I can't really comment about those.
Oh, but, yeah, that's true.
And we already had our big day here, which was the Academy Awards, which was last week. We did that at the end of our ratings period, so that was kind of fun. I don't know about you guys, but I'm just getting excited about, frankly, all the baseball that's about to happen.
Yeah.
I'm a baseball fan. And ABC is going to be carrying about 25 of the Cubs games this year. And between that and I think there's going to be a great, great focus on baseball. Not just because of the Cubs, the Sox are going to be great as well. And they actually, frankly, have, I think, better pitching than the Cubs. So it's going to be this whole crosstown social rivalry that, I don't know, I don't think we've had it here for many, many years. And the last few years have been just so bad. And the way baseball is part of the culture during the summer months, it's just going to be, I think it's going to be really exciting.
Sure.
I think also the Blackhawks are going to be something to watch too. Also a sporting thing turning into a cultural thing.
And then Ravi, are you guys over at Channel 7? Are you covering this presidential election thing? Cause that's getting a lot of play too.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It'll be, I was just actually earlier this morning, I was at a press conference with the mayor on these new CTA, rail cars that are going to be actually built here on the south side of Chicago, mm-hmm. and will be the next wave. And my colleague Charles Thomas, our political reporter, was there as well, and he helped frame the question and answer period to be far more, instead of it being about CTA rail cars, far more about politics and the presidential election and what the heck happened to Hillary in Michigan last night. So yeah, we are all over it, and as much as anybody else. The Illinois primary next Tuesday is a big focus of our coverage, and I think that a lot of eyes of the nation are going to be watching to see what happens in both of these races, especially on the Democratic side here, because, you know, let's face it, that was quite an upset for Bernie Sanders in Michigan yesterday.
Yes, it was.
If he's able to come close in Illinois, this being the place where Hillary Clinton's from and all the rest of it, I think that race is anything but decided at this point.
Ain't over yet.
It's not over yet. Ravi, it's fun to talk to you. It's weird the way you creep into news stories sometimes. For people who don't remember, you were the one who was in the studio the night that car ran into WLS's TV studio, right?
Yeah.
You got some national coverage there.
Again.
Yep. How about that?
That was nuts as well. And that was for people who ask me about that, and they ask quite a bit. That was coming up on like 9 years ago.
Wow.
So that was a long time ago. So you know, hopefully that doesn't happen again. And make no mistake, as silly as that kind of looks in that split second, that was pretty darn scary. But we survived and we kept our newscast going and we actually won an Emmy for it. So we're pretty happy about all that.
Beautiful. Great to talk to you. Good luck
Thank
with everything you,
you
do.
Job,
it's
you
fun
guys.
To watch you. All right. Thanks, Ravi.
Thanks, thanks so Ravi. Much.
Ravi Baiswal of ABC 7 and co-star of Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. We'll take a quick break and then we have more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Is your tongue getting enough rest? What's going on with your tongue?
Are you kidding? Do I ever shut up?
All right.
I need to be more like John Travolta doing Robert Shapiro, where he articulates everything perfectly.
Start talking like that. That's the way to be.
That is the best show on TV.
You're enjoying the People versus OJ?
I don't know why, but yes, I am.
It's going to be sad when it comes to an end.
I'm going to watch it over and over.
You're
going to
keep watching it in hopes that it ends differently?
We had an action-packed show today, and if I may just add, yesterday we briefly touched on this. There is a live blog on this very show, and you can go to WGNradio.com/Bill and Wendy. That now goes directly to the main show page, and you can find the live blog. So anything we've talked about today, for instance, we talked to Ravi Beshwal.
We did just moments ago.
We talked about Spin Ping Pong, which is opening tomorrow night, 344 North State Street. So there'll be a link to that. What do you do when you are married to someone or your significant other has different political views than you do? Dave Willis is someone we talked to, so that'll be on the live blog. Right. Pretty exciting. Kevin works harder on his birthday.
Chicago Magazine's Penny Pollack talked about food in and around the city. All that was on one show. That's a month worth of shows for other people, but we did that all in one day.
So can we take the rest of the week off?
Yeah, I'm not coming in tomorrow or Friday.
WGNradio.com/Bill and Wendy, and you will find the live blog there. Kevin, thanks for doing such a great job on that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, that's great. May I ask you, we just had Ravi Beshwal on, who, as we pointed out, was on, unbeknownst to him, that he was on this last week with John Oliver show, last week tonight with John Oliver. If you were watching a TV show, if you were in the privacy of your home and you're just watching a TV show and then all of a sudden there's footage of you in the show, wouldn't that be surrealistic that that was happening?
I would think it would be cool unless I was naked. Like Kim Kardashian has to stop being naked.
Well, all right. Actually, we need to talk about that. But I wanted to, this is what I was leading up to really quick, and then we'll get to Kim Kardashian. Ron Majors, who's the Channel 7 principal anchor, has told the story about how he was in an adult film. Did you know this?
No, but I always found him very attractive.
He is
still
in
do.
An adult film. And
how
what
adult.
What happened? Oh, as triple X as you can possibly be. And you go, I watch Ron Majors on the Channel 7 News. He doesn't seem the type to be in adult films. But here's what happened. Before he was an anchor in Chicago, he was an anchor in San Francisco, California. Where
anchor
they make,
is the operative word there.
Where they make... I don't know him that well. I just know what I see on the news, for heaven's sakes. They make, as it turns out, they make a good number of adult films there in San Francisco. And in the background of a scene in an adult film, the news is on while two people are...
That's what I watch.
Kissing and smooching
and
spooning.
And the moment Ron Majors on my TV, that's what does it.
Well, he's in the scene because they show the news
it's
and
so
you
funny.
Got Ron Majors doing the news while they're going about their business.
That would be the highlight of my broadcasting career.
To be in an adult film.
Did he get paid for that?
I don't think so.
I think they have to. Well, yeah.
You would think
get
legally.
Get Ron Jeremy on the phone.
That's dirty money if he gets that.
Yeah, that's dirty money, Wendy. I wouldn't accept that
money's
money.
Money's money. Dirty or not.
Dirty money.
I would not take it either.
I'll take yours then.
All right. Kevin, if any dirty money comes in, please send it Wendy's way because you won't take it and I won't take it. Thanks, but no thanks to the dirty money.
Can I also clear something up here? And
yeah.
Then briefly, you can touch on the Kim Kardashian if you want to touch on it.
I don't get that. Go on.
Someone, I was worried about my son Michael kissing the Blarney Stone. I have gotten 15 texts saying that you don't want to kiss the Blarney Stone.
Why not?
Because the people in Ireland relieve themselves on it.
Why would they do that?
Because crazy Americans and other people come and kiss it. So I'm supposed to tell them to fake kiss it for the photo op. When a cranky old man leans you over.
That's not good. That's not good.
That's all I've been told. I trust the listeners.
All right. We only have a couple minutes, but the Kim Kardashian story started out big and is now getting bigger. She apparently likes to take Instagram pictures of herself without any clothes on, and she's done it yet again. And now she's getting blasted from... Of course, Bette Midler is going to take a shot at her. I don't understand why, but Bette Midler is very upset about this. Chloe Moretz, you know who she is, the actress?
Yeah, I know
Pink.
The name.
There's people lining up, and I get their point. They're all saying essentially the same thing. We've seen it. Put those things away. What's wrong with you? You're a mom now, for heaven's sakes.
She can do what she wants. What is Bette Midler's just jealous.
I don't know why Bette Midler has taken it upon herself to scold her, but all right.
That seems just wrong.
The Bette Midler part of it? Yeah, yeah. All right.
You know, just delete her as your Instagram following.
But wouldn't you think, because now at this point, she has a couple of kids, right? So if,
at some point, aren't those kids going to get up and go, Mom, how come you keep taking pictures of yourself without any clothes on and putting them on the Instagram? Why? What's wrong with you?
Isn't that her problem to deal with, her and who she married to?
She's married to Kanye West. But if this was your mom, if we're going back a couple of years, mom was doing that, wouldn't you at some point go, Mom, first of all, what is Instagram? How you visitor from the future? How did you know such a thing would exist?
Did you make your own iPhone? That's what I would ask her.
But wouldn't you be slightly disturbed with your mom if she felt the need to keep showing up without her clothes on public media?
I gotta tell you, if my mom looked like that, maybe I wouldn't mind.
All right. That's the barometer. All right, I get it.
It's her own business, Bet. You know, seriously. And yeah. Pink, you've been on trapeze wearing things that aren't naked, but you could pretty much see your whole body.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
I don't know.
Just chalk it up to Kardashian. That's what I'm doing everything now. Just chalk it up to Kardashian.
You're looking at it the right way. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Ro and Anna will be in. We'll find out what they have next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.